It's Friday!
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Indeed, here we go, off and running on this 11th day of September 2020, the end of the first full week of September, and Friday on the front porch. Yes, here in about an hour's time, we will gather around the extraordinary, ordinary round table in the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves and cuss and discuss the stories of the week that strike the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable members as being most worthy of conversation. You, of course, can be part of that conversation if you'd like. Just run over to headon.live and click on the big button at the top of the page, and you'll be right there amongst us all. And you're mighty welcome so to do. Brother Deacon Asa telling me, 9 by 9 by 9, you 9/11 shill, you. Yeah, somebody, I put up a post today about the Day of Remembrance, and of course there's always somebody there. 9/11 was an inside job, wake up sheeple! Yeah, no. And I said, now I'll leave the 9/11 truther bullshit to Alex Jones. Yeah. So that's what Brother Deacon Asa was talking about. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so thanks go out to our 11th day of the month subscribers, for which we are immensely grateful, all the partial sponsors of the program that make it possible for the program to continue to exist. Thank you very kindly to Christopher, and thank you to our buddy Tony in Chico. Thank you to John, very kindly. Thank you to Paul from Parts Unknown. Thank you, Debbie, for jumping in last night and getting us from 420 down to 410. Thank you very kindly indeed. So, one and all, many thanks for being partial sponsors of the program. Because that's how we, you know, keep it all on the air. Because there's no ads. No corporate sponsorships. None of that silly shit. And thank you, of course, to Brother Deacon Gerald, Chair of the Cathedral of Common Sense Building and Grounds Committee, also a partial sponsor of the program. Thank you very much indeed. So where does that leave us? Well, $410 to go this evening to finish the week and pay some bills that are awaiting. Of course, as we move into the program this evening, the general reminder always obtains, if you'd like to augment your experience, well, there's nothing better than the Horn Chat Room, the madcap multimedia wacky zany real-time extravaganza that takes place in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the great globe around. If you do jump in, you'll be immediately greeted by Anatole and Jimmy and Original Sailor Chick and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky, with more yet to come, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who I wouldn't fold space either. Even if I was a third stage guild navigator, I wouldn't fold space amongst all that smoke. You can get lost. And Sparky is capably assisted by pinch hit midweek chat room moderator, utility chat room moderator, and all around great guy, Steve from Georgia Stan. So we got a good group together, more wandering by, and we'll, like I said, get the Friday on the Front Porch conversation started in about an hour or so. A couple of notes to begin the program. Let's see here. Oh, daggone, where'd it go? Ah, there it is. Our pal, Bob, in North Carolina, a longtime co-sponsor, partial sponsor of the program, says, this week we had to stomach Nitwit Nero on our tarmac here in Winston-Salem. At least the local stations didn't carry it live. With Trump gathering names for his list of Supreme Court nominees, I hope the justices have stepped up their security. I wouldn't put it past him to murder one of the liberal justices before the inauguration. Before November 3rd, frankly, or between November 3rd and January. Yeah, something like that. And, of course, any notion that if he were to be defeated in November, any notion that his appointments would be illegitimate would not apply, at least not according to Moscow Mitch McConnell, because, of course, this president, well, he's not, you know, black. He's orange. I don't know. Do you suppose Justices Ginsburg and Breyer and Sotomayor and Kagan, do they have the budget money for a food taster? Might be a good idea. And just a general piece of advice, Bob, since you had a super spreader event in North Carolina, it's probably wise just to try to not be out in public or out around anybody who's breathing air for a couple of weeks until the super spreader can have run its course. The same thing applies, of course, to Michigan last night, where he had a super spreader event. No masks and full-scale madness on wild display. I'm sure by now you've seen or heard all the clips you could possibly want to see or hear. Yeah. And a little piece of viewing advice from Glenn in San Diego. Help assure Miss Wisconsin goes blue and enjoy a bit of film history, too. This is a message to the ad hoc film club of the air, ad hoc film club of the air portion of Friday on the Front Porch, and of course the entire Horn Family Community Congregation. For all the film buffs in the Horn community who live in blue wave Democratic states or maggot red Republican states and would like your campaign contribution dollars to be most effective, here's an invitation to spread some of that campaign grease oozing from your pockets onto the wheels of the Democratic Party in a super critical swing state. Will Wisconsin go for Trump again in November? Inconceivable! This Sunday, September the 13th, day after tomorrow, the original cast of the classic cult film The Princess Bride, minus, of course, Andre the Giant. Yes. We'll be doing a live stream reading of the film's script with a Q&A afterward moderated by Patton Oswalt. This will be a not-to-be-repeated benefit for the Wisconsin Democratic Party hosted by Act Blue. It'll be a fun way to spend a Sunday evening while contributing to a crucial state campaign that most certainly will be a deciding factor in determining the direction of our nation for at least the next generation. I believe the donation is basically whatever you can afford. Trump won there by a razor-thin margin in 2016, thanks Jill Stein, and is spending millions there to try to take the state again. If you haven't enjoyed the film in a while or at all and want to bone up for the reading, it's available to rent on Amazon for $3.99. As an extra sweet bonus, you'll be sticking an elbow, metaphorically, into the ribs of the booger-eating future anointed king and Supreme Court judge what-the-fuck Rafael Eduardo Cruz. When news broke of this reading, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, had himself a plum hissy, saying, "Hollywood liberals need to stay out of politics." Because he fancied that he, like me, was a high school theater buff. And, you know, once the bug bites, it's hard to make it go away. But he loves to quote from The Princess Bride. As Glenn points out, he claims this to be his favorite film, Rafaelito does, and he spews lines from it incessantly and loves to imagine himself as Inigo Montoya. He's also totally pissed and taking it as a personal affront that the cast is daring to exploit the film for political purposes by performing this reading. So, on Wisconsin, everybody sing, here's to Teddy, he's superior, here's to Teddy, he's a horse's posterior. I don't know the tune. And here's to Teddy, he's got class, here's to Teddy, he's a horse's ass. And please pass the information along to all your friends and family who aren't maggots. By the way, one of the best retorts to his complaints, Rafaelito's complaints about the reading and the benefit for the Wisconsin Democratic Party, came from Mandy Patinkin, who played Inigo Montoya. You know, the whole, my name is Inigo Montoya, you killed my father, prepare to die. Mandy Patinkin responded to Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, and as if Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, was in fact the six-fingered man, Mandy Patinkin stuck it in him and broke it off. In a tweet, Mandy Patinkin said, "Cruz is always quoting from The Princess Bride. I wonder why he never quotes my favorite line." And I've seen stories and video where Mandy Patinkin refers to this, so he didn't just make it up. Mandy Patinkin says his favorite line in the film comes at the end. When Inigo Montoya is asked what he will do now that he has achieved his goal, his lifelong goal, Mandy Patinkin responds, and this is his favorite line, "I have been in the revenge business so long, I don't know what to do with the rest of my life." And then suggested that maybe Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, might want to get out of the revenge business. Naturally, I'm sure that fell on deaf ears. So if you want to watch this thing, and who wouldn't? WISDEMS, WISDEMS.org. Did I do the "Hi, I'm Bob" part? Hi, I'm Bob. WISDEMS.org, WISDEMS.org. News. The Princess Bride cast to hold reunion script reading fundraiser for Democratic Party of Wisconsin. I have a feeling if you just put wisdems.org and script reading Princess Bride in your favorite browser search engine, I have a feeling this will probably pop for you. I'm going to scrape up something over the weekend because I have no doubt that Agnes and I would absolutely love to watch this. My goodness gracious, yes. Andre, I wonder who will read Andre the Giant. Maybe Rob Reiner. I don't know. But this is as worthy a cause as I can think of, given the gravity of the situation we face. What else? I've got this. Bob! We all know what that signals. Bob! Wow, what a difference a year makes, as on this day last year, I took an early flight out of Columbus to L.A., hustled down to Orange County to pick up Billable Rick, and then we were on the road to San Diego, where we would later meet up with Scotty for lunch. After lunch, we called Bob's show and had a special time on the horn that afternoon. We had so much fun that one of the natives heard us and horned in on our call as San Diego native Tamara crashed the call midstream. It crashed in quotes and lovingly noted. Showing up at the mall just in time for some methed up gelato. Gee, what a shock. A woman showing up at the mall. You're going to pay for that, Joey. We were happy to have her as she fit right in our small gathering. After the call, Rick and I took in a Padres-Cubs game, which, by the way, because of the Rona, we could not attend a game this year. Then Rick and I headed back to L.A. I was dog-tired and mentioned to Rick he might have to take the wheel. Rick asked me how far I could drive in my tired state, and I told him not to worry because I'm sure I can get us to the scene of the crash. Yeah. Fortunately, we made it back to L.A., and since I was dog-tired, I decided to curl up on the couch with William, the family dog, at Star's lovely home in Garden Grove. Sadly, I will not be making a trip this fall to L.A. because of the Rona and the fire season arriving early this year, because I really wanted to meet Bella, the baby German Shepherd. Yes, what a difference a year makes. This year, today, 9/11 really has some serious meaning, as everything in this country appears to be all fucked up. On the lighter side, Rick had a wonderful golf outing recently with 3 birdies and an eagle. Yes, Rick actually hit an eagle on one of his drives to the green. However, the eagle was not green. Actually, the eagle was blue because the poor fucker was dead after Rick's ball hit him in the head. Ah, golf humor. Meanwhile, back at the gender reveal party, yes, it was an uncircumcised boy, as Rick so aptly informed us. Now, you're probably wondering what an uncircumcised baby has to do with golf. Well, as it turns out, the baby boy is the prodigy of a couple of golf pros, and they want their baby boy to play the tour someday on the PGA. Uncircumcised baby and PGA? Well, to be successful in both situations, well, you know, you have to... Oh, Jesus, really, Joey? Make the cut. What's that, Giraffrey? Giraffrey says he's cutting out early tonight because he's going to hit the greens and smoke some grass. However, Giraffrey wants to put a $50 Make the Cut challenge on the table. This has been Joey's Journal for Friday, 9/11, with Giraffrey flying high as an eagle tonight. Fly like an eagle to the sea. Fly like an eagle, let my spirit carry me. Never mind. Stop with the singing. So there's a $50 challenge on the table to help us knock out $410 this evening if it's met. Then we'll only have $310 to go. Thank you, Giraffrey, and thank you, Joey. Well, what a difference a year makes indeed. I don't trust my ciphering, so I have punted and opted for the calculator instead. But let's see. Let's just say 186... Ought. Gazetta. And 3,000. Yes. Since the last time we commemorated the attacks of September 11th, 2001, there have been the equivalent of 62 9/11 attacks. 62. And that would that would be the Rona that we're talking about here. 186,000 people died unnecessarily between last year and now. And the number will probably be nearer, if not higher than 400,000, maybe approaching 500,000 by New Year's Day. 19 hijackers on September 11th, 2001, killed immediately 3,000 people. The number of dead from the after effects of September 11th, 2001, if it has not already, it will in fairly short order surpass the number of people killed on that day. Because if you recall, George W. Bush's EPA administrator, Christy Todd Whitman, ran out lickety-split and said, no, the air is completely safe to breathe at Ground Zero. Just huff it all right in. No problem. Only it wasn't. It was toxic as hell. And so on this day, I always remember a dear friend of ours. Her name was Maura Cullen. And she was one of the people who breathed that not as safe as Christy Todd Whitman Republican air. That she'd claimed was okay. And it destroyed Maura's health. And one of the last things she did was to call this program when I was on air and say goodbye to the Horn Family Community Congregation. That was years ago now. But I always think of her on this day. Wherever you are or aren't, Maura, be at peace. And we will carry the fight forward. She was a passionate, passionate defender of progressive and liberal values. And while we're talking about September 11th, well, let's understand first and foremost the difference between the 19 hijackers of September 11th, 2001 and the maggots of 2020 is that the maggots have proven to be far more effective killers than those 19 hijackers. We laid waste to Iraq and Afghanistan, even though Iraq had nothing to do with September 11th, 2001, and Afghanistan had only a tangential causal relationship. We laid waste those two countries. We never laid so much as a finger on the country from which 16 of those 19 hijackers came, the royal, noble, puissant, serene, majestic, gracious, noble kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Of course not. And in fact, Donald Trump bragged to Bob Woodward for the book Rage. Bragged to him about helping get Congress off Mohammed bin Bonesaw's back. Because that's the kind of shit-eating, miserable scumbag Donald J. Trump is. So it turns out that the maggots are far better bioterrorists than the 19 hijackers were at flying planes into buildings. Because the maggots, the mask holes, the COVIDiots, the branch COVIDians, hooting and grunting and barking and shrieking and squealing and singing and spewing and spraying and larping and grabillating and smollicking and lollygagging from sea to shining sea have perpetrated upon us 62, the equivalent of 62 9/11s since roughly February of this year, 7 months. And because the MAGAT administration is nothing but an agglomeration of footpads and cut purses and highwaymen and sneak thieves and lick spittles and toadies and bootlicks, well, it turns out that they've managed to rip off about $4 million from the program that deals with the health consequences from September 11th, 2001 for Fire Department of New York firefighters and medics. The story came from the New York Daily News. The Treasury Department, which has a which is stopped up with Mnuchins, or a Mnuchin, has been withholding payments. And they've been doing it for almost 4 years. Payments that are supposed to cover medical services for firefighters, emergency medical technicians, paramedics who have verified claims related to the attacks on the World Trade Center and who are treated by the FDNY World Trade Center Health Program. The payments were authorized and came out of the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, NIOSH, and the MAGATs have been quietly robbing the fund. Dr. David Prezant is the director of the program, and the Treasury has been skimming the cash, getting its beak wet. Dr. Prezant said this was just disappearing. This is the most amazing thing. This was disappearing without any notification. In 2016 and 2017, they skimmed about $500,000 a year. In 2018 and 2019, Mnuchin's treasury glommed about $630,000. This year, they've really gone pro. And the Department of the Treasury has ripped off survivors of September 11th, 2001 to the tune of $1.447 million. And that's just up to the end of August. Dr. Prezant is the chief medical officer of the Fire Department of New York. He said, here we have sick World Trade Center exposed firefighters and EMS workers at a time when the city is having difficult financial services circumstances due to COVID-19, and we're not getting the money we need to be able to treat these heroes. And for years, they wouldn't even tell us. We never even received a letter telling us. Well, you know, burglars don't usually send correspondence. And neither NIOSH or the Department of Health and Human Services will give Dr. Prezant anything in the way of an explanation. This is not surprising, considering that early on, the Department of Interior stole $1 million from sick hillbillies trying to find out what it was about mountaintop removal that was killing them. Because, see, it takes about 3 years in central Appalachia for the dust and fallout from mountaintop removal operations to kill as many people as died on September 11th, 2001 at Ground Zero. And they stole from us. If you want to read this particular account, you can find it at the New York Daily News. Trump administration has secretly withheld millions from FDNY 9/11 health program. even Representative Peter King, a Republican, about a half, two-thirds, seven-eighths of a maggot, even he's pissed off. He said, he said it's disgraceful. I don't even care what the details of this thing is. That fund has to be fully compensated, fully reimbursed. I mean, this is absurd. If anyone were true American heroes, it was the cops and firemen on 9/11, especially the firemen, and for even $1 to be being held back is absolutely defensible. And said he was going to confront Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek today. We'll see. We'll see. Let's check in on a few notes, a few more notes. Kyle in Kentucky, Stan. But the moose limbs, Bob. Ah! Well, you know, the Saudis are the good Muslims, Bob, says Kyle, because they got the oil. Yeah, as a stand-in for Andre the Giant, Justin Trudeau asks. James in Illinois. I think I like the idea of Rob Reiner better, but, yeah. James adds, Christy Todd Whitman's lie. I knew she was lying because I knew that the insulation on the beams and the towers were full of heavy metals. All of that shit and every stick of furniture in them was all pre-EPA. I was screaming at the TV. Don't forget all the iron workers, Bob. There's more of them than cops or firefighters in that pile. Not counting the dead ones. And their health issues are moot. There's no fund for them. Thanks for the reminder, James. Thank you. You know, I talked earlier about having watched, Agnes and I having watched Chernobyl. That thing had a profound impact on me. And say what you will of the Soviet Union, they at least put the people most directly responsible for the disaster at Chernobyl on trial. We, on the other hand, have never even so much as muttered the idea of trying Christy Todd Whitman for the malignant negligence she displayed when she said, no, that air's safe to breathe. Yeah. Steve in New York says, 62 9/11s. So, the greatest death toll. I'll give him this. Nobody knew this could happen just 3.5 years ago. Ah, not so fast, Steve. I cannot remember the woman's name, but she wrote, I think back in 2015... a book about the next pandemic, the coming pandemic. And she was correct in almost every aspect. I don't know if she mentions the possibility of having a malignant narcissist, sociopath, intellectually damaged president, but she got most of the details right. Lee in New York addressing the issue of Peter King's aggravation. King only cares because some of the people who died on 9/11 lived in his area. I wonder if he would care about an equivalent attack in California. Let's see how much he cares about the fires. He didn't care enough about America to vote to impeach Donald Trump when the evidence was there in front of his face in garish technicolor. And, of course, another aspect of that impeachment having been proven recently with the Department of Justice, amazingly enough, having designated Andriy Derkach, a Ukrainian dirtbag who funneled information, bullshit information about Joe Biden to Rudy Giuliani. the Justice Department has designated him a Russian foreign agent and said he has been for a very long time. If you'd like to see what he looks like, there should be archival footage over at Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground. The miserable right-wing maggot propaganda organ operation that gave airtime, in which Rudy Giuliani sat down and talked at length about what a crook Joe Biden is, and did so in the company of this Ukrainian pro-Russian scumbag. If you want to go looking for that sort of thing. My uncle Ron, Stephen, New York, notes, as I mentioned earlier this week, my uncle died last Friday. Today he would have been 76. He was a lover of Budweiser. I know, nobody's perfect. In celebration of his birthday and him, I lift a Bud. Uncle Ron, wherever you are, I hope you're watching some reruns of Buckeyes Bengals when they were actually good, Reds game, or sitting in a Bass Tracker boat casting out for a nice northern pike. Uncle Ron, this Bud's for you. Hook a biggin, Uncle Ron. Jeremy in Vermont, at Chernobyl. Some of the best scenes involve the lead digger. Would you wear this mask? Do you honestly think it will help? We're all dead men, and them digging nude to stay cool all the time, knowing what they were doing would ultimately kill most of them. You know, the whole thing was a horror. And I don't know, did Chernobyl win an Emmy for best makeup? Because their recreation of the terminal days of people suffering from massive radiation poisoning and burns over 100% of their body was literally shocking to behold. If you've never seen it, I encourage watching it. Oh, and David in South Carolina, Stan, lets us know that playing Fortunate Son as Nitwit Nero deplaned in Michigan, well, it didn't go over particularly well with John Fogerty, the man who sang it and wrote it for Creedence Clearwater Revival. He said he found the use of that song confounding. As he walked off Air Force One, they played it in Freeland, Michigan. And he said, I found it very upsetting that such a thing could occur, and that's why I wrote Fortunate Son, namely people of privilege using their wealth and their social status to stay out of Vietnam, which, of course, is exactly what Cadet Bone Spurs did. Everybody refers to him as being orange. I prefer to think of him as yellow. The yellow president, how many deferments for those Bone Spurs that didn't even exist? And, of course, alongside folks like Rusty Limbaugh, who managed to evade the draft by claiming that he had an infected, festering, pus and hair-filled cyst upon his anus. They were creative, if nothing else. Ted Nugent claiming he wore the same clothes for a couple of weeks and did all of his bodily eliminations in them. He shat and pissed himself for a week or two and then showed up at the draft board. And when people questioned Nitwit Nero's scam to stay out of Vietnam. That's when he said,
"The only people who went in that war were suckers. I wasn't gonna go."
Utterly oblivious to the people whom he had subjected to go in his place. Yeah. Now, of course, there was a 9/11 memorial in Shanksville, Pennsylvania today. That's the one that Corona Caligula and his wife Melanoma attended. Naturally, they did the Pledge of Allegiance. And you know, when you do the Pledge of Allegiance, everybody's supposed to say the Pledge of Allegiance, unless you're a Jehovah's Witness. Apparently, Melanoma and COVID Claudius must be recent converts to Jehovah's Witnessing, because they managed to get their hands over some portion of their chest where, for instance, in Melanoma's case, her heart resides under her kidneys. But you can, this is useless on radio, but I'll tell you, you can watch the video and you can hear everybody else saying the pledge, but neither of them, neither Julius Geezer nor Melanoma, the first presidential spouse in the history of this nation, ever to remove their clothing in exchange for money for the sexual gratification of total strangers, knew any of the words. Okay, maybe Geezer Disgustus knew a couple of the words. But Melanoma just stands there like a graven statue from the old Soviet Union. Maybe she's afraid she'd burst into flames if she said the words. I mean, it's okay for me to do this because they're the ones that are been throwing fits for years over people not saying words. For years, it was Trump fulminating and grunting about how
Barack Obama won't say radical Muslim terrorists, radical Islamic fundamentalist terrorists. He won't say it.
And so the new fad is to say,
well, the things are on fire in American cities and there are protests because sleepy Joe Biden won't say law and order.
Maybe if he says that in the debate, nah, Joe would never do it, but damn, it would be fun if he did.
He won't say law and order.
And Joe just responds by saying, dum-dum, dum-dum.
I don't know why he won't say law and order, dum-dum.
You got to admit that would be worth the price of admission, wouldn't it? Oh, hell yes. Wow. Chernobyl won a shit ton of awards. Thanks, Jeremy. I can't go all the way through this list to find the makeup. There's the name of the book. Thank you. Lori Garrett. The Coming Plague, Newly Emerging Diseases in a World Out of Balance. I'm sorry, 1994, not 2015, so. Yeah, we've known it was coming. I don't know if there's a scenario in there in which the pandemic hits with a malignant, narcissist, intellectually disabled crook and grifter and mob boss wannabe in the White House, but that's asking for a level of granularity from a prophet that's probably it's a virus too far. That would be good, too. Steve in New York pointing out what Joe Biden should do in the debate is this. Mr. President, will you lead us in saying the Pledge of Allegiance? Can you do that? Yeah. Ah, okay, we've got some follow-up information courtesy of Glenn in San Diego as to the script reading of The Princess Bride. Bob, I failed to mention that, of course, Peter Falk will also be missing from the lineup as the grandfather and narrator of the tale. My guess is Rob Reiner will probably be covering that role. Word is that Josh Gad, known as the voice of Olaf in the Frozen movies, will be replacing Andre the Giant in the role of Fezzik. That could be very, very good on both counts. Thanks, Glenn. What else on this Friday on the front porch? Well, the goddess of irony misses nothing. And so all praise to her as the Trump campaign released an ad trying to make hay out of the fact that Mango Mussolini had been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. I know a lot of people got upset about that. I got a note from Tracy basically saying, ah! And I had to remind her, anybody can nominate anyone for the Nobel Peace Prize. It's not like the Academy Awards where the nomination is the real honor as opposed to the win. No. So they produced an ad, the Trump campaign did. Maybe it was the same people who chose Fortunate Son for the draft dodger to get off Air Force One in Michigan. But the screen cap shows a picture of him with a sort of half a smirk on his yellow visage. President Trump was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. No, really. It's a real live, honest to God Trump 2020 campaign ad in which they spell Nobel, you know, Alfred Nobel. Nobel Peace Prize. It's not like the maggots. It's not like the maggots would notice it, but it's at least a sort of whistling past the graveyard giggle for the rest of us, the Nobel Prize, Nobel Peace Prize. Of course, if he were to win it, I think it would become the Ignoble Peace Prize. Then again, thanks to Donald Trump, 186,000 American citizens are at present, and the number grows, of course, experiencing eternal peace. It's another one of those lines I remember from the Lion in Winter. Henry, exasperated with Eleanor, says, "Give me a little peace." And she responds, "A little? Why so modest? How about eternal peace?" Eternal peace. Randy in PA points out it was also a woman who gave testimony to a smirking Congress pleading for control of the derivatives market prior to the 2000-2008 financial collapse. Ah, there it was. Hollywood Makeup Artist and Hairstylist Guild Awards. Apparently that went to Chernobyl. Thank you, Jeremy. Novel prediction, Lee in New York writes. If the author had tried to predict a pandemic occurring under a president like Trump, the publisher would have rejected it because that level of fiction is inconceivable. A little cowbell for the Princess Bride back reference there. Yes. Let's see. Just getting us all set up to begin the Friday on the Front Porch conversation. Again, we've got $410 to finish the week. And, well, for the last 3 weeks or so, I've been hemorrhaging money. I sat down to try to add up everything that Ferg's new job has cost, and whoa, because he hasn't seen a paycheck yet. In fact, I even intended to open the program this evening as, "Hi, I'm Bob, amateur Uber driver." Ugh. What else do we have this evening? Well, I know from time to time and that I point out things that we've talked about on this program weeks, if not months, if not years in advance. And somehow or another, it eventually percolates into the multimillionaire media. But these things are further proof that if you are a member of the Horn Family Community Congregation, you will find yourself way the fuck out in front of the curve. So far out in front of the curve, you won't be able to see the curve behind you. And so last night on Lawrence O'Donnell's program on MSNBC, they invited journalism professor Jelani Cobb to have a little sit-down chat with Lawrence O'Donnell. And Professor Cobb told Lawrence O'Donnell that his overt and open bigotry, xenophobia, and racism has had a cathartic effect. Ooh, fancy word. A cathartic effect. And that his supporters knew exactly what was going to be happening for them, and they knew, they first experienced that warm thrill of confusion, that space cadet glow, the moment that he referred to Mexicans as rapists, as he on the same day that he came down that stupid escalator. Jelani Cobb said to Lawrence O'Donnell, "There is a linear connection from that first statement." And he went on to note, "What we did not anticipate was the extent to which people had been yearning to kind of go to their window and shout these kinds of things out loud to the public." Well, here on this program, we've talked about that for years. That the reason they won't criticize him for all of his vituperative hate, for all of his vicious attacks, his sexism, his racism, his xenophobia, his general bigotry, is because for them, for the maggots, for 33% of this country, it's a feature, not a flaw. And that every time he attacks an ethnicity or a nationality, the maggots hop up and down and hoot and bark and grunt and squeal and squeak in rapturous joy because they feel the same way too, and he's made it okay to be overtly biased, bigoted, racist, xenophobic, homophobic, transphobic. Pick one. Take them all, because God knows the maggots do. But I guess for a certain segment of the population, a rather large segment of the population who doesn't listen to the horn, that was a big deal. That was one of those urethra moments with Archimedes leaping out of the pool. How about that, sports fans? That kind of thing. And one more before we check in the old holler tree. Oh, yeah, I know. Steve in New York. Oh, no, Bob. It's economic anxiety. Yeah. Just ask J.D. Vance, the guy who isn't a hillbilly, who grew up in Ohio and went on to write a book after he got his ticket punched to Yale. And made a fortune off of a book called Hillbilly Elegy, in which he tells the stupid hillbillies that they have to pull together and pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, even though the boots were probably stolen off the front porch by a pill by an opioid addict or a meth head. Yeah. Of course, economic anxiety. Silent R. Lamar says, Brother Bob, your depiction of Biden and Trump's debate almost caused me to fall out of my chair. I could see Trump looking like a deer in the headlights and saying, what do you mean with that response? And then Biden, I don't understand quite what you're, this is a cold read, so I don't quite understand what you're saying there, Silent R.
Dum-dum. What do you mean by that?
No, Donnie, say it again. Say the phrase I won't say. You say that I won't say.
Law and order, dum-dum.
You got to admit it'd be fun. You know, I've talked a lot on this program about the toxicity of just trying to live from one day to the next in the Central Appalachian Sacrifice Zone where mountaintop removal's practiced. And a gentle reminder, during the Rona pandemic, the people who are supposed to inspect mountaintop removal operations, well, they're working from home, which means they're not inspecting mines. They're just kind of thinking about inspecting mines. Hey, are y'all doing everything you're supposed to be doing? Oh, yeah, definitely. Absolutely. I would never violate a rule here. No. Well, if there's another place in the United States, and there is, where it's damn near toxic to try to make it from one day into the next, that would be the area of Louisiana known as Cancer Alley. Refineries, chemical plants, what have you. And a new peer-reviewed piece of research from the State University of New York and ProPublica, produced in partnership with the Times-Picayune and The Advocate, both members of the ProPublica local reporting network. Well, it turns out that chemical plants in Louisiana's Cancer Alley have a correlation with one's being more likely to die of the Rona. What? Yes. Makes perfect sense to me because these are, because living next to chemical capitalism, well, we know already that they never put chemical plants next to mansion communities. Oh, God, no. I remember 2017, my God, 3 years ago now, what a magic day that was, driving across Interstate 10 from Mobile to New Orleans with my beloved in the seat next to me. We stopped at the New Orleans welcome station, looked around, and she had a cup of complimentary community coffee. She was in such a, it was a beautiful day, and she was in such a fine mood. Oh, beautiful. Just beautiful. A little bit like a honeymoon. And we were booked in a nice little hotel right off Canal Street, just across the street from the French Quarter. But we were going to go to the, because she was fascinated by it and so was I, we were going to go to the site of the Battle of New Orleans, which actually sits outside New Orleans in a place called Chalmette. And to get there, we got off of I-10 and wandered down into the industrial wastelands near New Orleans. And all the homes there were, to use the most charitable of terms, humble. It was like driving through certain parts of West Virginia if you took a great big rolling pin and rolled it out flatter than piss on a plate. Homes surrounded by massive, toxic, spewing chemical operations. And in the middle of it all, that little preserved hunk of land where even after the peace treaty had been signed, and British soldiers far, far, far from home had marched into a deadly blizzard of lead in a field of fire laid out for them by people like Andrew Jackson and Jean Lafitte. Yeah. Scotsman who would never hear the pipes again. And so Cancer Alley there, the article in the ProPublica article in conjunction with research from the State University of New York. Well, one of the places they deal with is a Riverside, Louisiana city called Port Allen. That's where in 1978 the Placid oil refinery blew to kingdom come, and Diana LeBlanc and her children had to evacuate in the middle of the night. She had two babies with her. She's 70 now, and Diana LeBlanc said, "I always had to be on the alert." But now, Diana LeBlanc understands that even though there was nothing, there wasn't another explosion, that she was being poisoned the entire time. And she got the Rona. And the Rona, of course, was made manifestly worse by the impact on her ability to breathe that these toxic plants had given her. She said, "That's the one time in my life I thought, I'm not going to survive this. I'm going to become a statistic. I was that sick." The article focuses on the effect of hazardous air pollutants, HAPs, on COVID-19. A study published today in the Journal of Environmental Research Letters said that these impacts were found both in Louisiana and densely populated communities in New York. Examining 3,100 U.S. counties, the researchers saw a close correlation between the amount of hazardous pollutants in the air and the per capita death rate from COVID-19. Places like West Baton Rouge Parish, that's where Port Allen is. As of September 7th, they had 39 deaths in West Baton Rouge Parish. That puts the per capita death rate from COVID-19 in the top 3% of all U.S. counties that have at least 30 deaths. this is not surprising, but it is good at least to see it quantified and put out for public consumption. And it's part of the reason that communities of color experience such a disparate impact of COVID-19, because, well, massive polluters like to locate next to communities that have no power with which to oppose them. And so the presence of these pollutants likely contributes to the elevated mortality of COVID-19 in communities of color. And recently, over at the T.H. Chan School of Public Health at Harvard, which turns out to actually be a respectable outfit, not like Harvard Law that turns out the likes of K. Lai Maganini. The T.H. Chan School of Public Health, examined particulate matter in the air, airborne particulates, and their relationship to the Rona. And they said long-term exposure to the particulates make the coronavirus more deadly. But over at the Maggot EPA and among the industry lobby groups, they say, nuh-uh, it ain't been peer-reviewed. You know, just like the maggots in South Dakota that we talked about in yesterday's program. It ain't been peer-reviewed. Well, the study that I referred to earlier damn sure has. So that'll reduce the chemical lobby groups and the maggot EPA to just, nuh-uh. Yeah. So we're going to find out more and more and more about the targeted nature of the malicious, willful, wanton, reckless conduct that has attended this pandemic under the leadership of Donald J. Trump. The J stands for I can't breathe. But now let's run over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable where Sparky sits, keeping the gang in order. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
How smoky are you today?
Well, the air quality index is hazardous, so it's recommended you stay indoors. It's 533.
Jesus.
But it's not like it was Wednesday. That was the weirdest day. I usually wake up at 9 o'clock. I got a radio. I'm listening to this Stephanie Miller sometimes, and I know when she's over and Tom Hartman starts. It's 9 o'clock, so I get up because I go to bed at like 1 o'clock in the morning. My first thing, I open my eyes, I look around, I looked at the blinds, and I go, why is it still so dark? So then I opened up the shades, and I saw the fucking orange sky, and I went, oh my God. And so I had to get the camera out and run it in the backyard, see what it was like back there. So I took that picture, standing there. You could see the ash particles in the picture. It was plashed. Reflected off of all my motion sensor lights would come on if you walk by them.
Wow.
But it was.
And then you're, was, you said, you
it
said
was
you're
up
what?
In the air, though.
You're
it
30
wasn't down
you're,
on the ground.
You're 30, huh? You're 30 miles away from the Trinity fire?
No, I'm way far away from that.
Oh, okay, you mentioned that one fire had started up within 30 miles of you yesterday.
No, I didn't say it 30 miles. I just said another fire at Trinity Lake.
Oh, okay. I don't know where I got the 30 miles then. But
Dad, the first fire was like 30, 40 miles away from me. It's still going on, but it's burning to the south. And it's joined with a couple other fires. Now it's called a complex fire, so they rename it. And the one over the Bear Fire that joins with another fire is over by Lake Oroville.
Oh, I know. I've got a map here that Dave number 11 sent. And Jesus Christ, it's just astonishing to behold.
The state map?
No. This is this takes in everything. I mean, Washington, Oregon, California.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And you can zoom in on it, and you can see the things that the satellites have identified as hot spots.
Well, that fire, that fire over there, it just took off like a bomb that night. That's what caused all that orange smoke. It went clear down to the Bay Area. You've probably seen the pictures of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I had a note from Cynthia in the Bay Area last night talking about how miserable the air quality is there. And I had photos. I had a photo from Tom in not so sunny San Rafael of the sun trying to peek through like a twice as distant star through the smoke.
Yeah, I started to watch the news conference of 49ers, and the coach was first asked. He goes, "What about the air quality out there?" And he said, "Well, it was only 150. He said if it was 200, they'd have a problem. And they don't know what's going to happen if it's still like that on Sunday for the game.
Oh, speaking of the game, stay classy, Kansas City, huh?
Oh, yeah.
What a bunch of assholes.
I'm not surprised. Hey, everybody.
Hey, yeah, Bilbo Rick, what's happening?
I was sitting there going, what the hell are they
doing? I'm trying to breathe as well. L.A. County is horrible. The whole county. I live in the foothills north of L.A., and I'd say the fires are maybe 30 miles east of me, and they seem to be moving westward. At least the progression of the smoke is westward, and you can hardly see anything. I was driving out today to work, and it's like, geez. Drove past the where the fire is, but I couldn't see anything because it was too smoky. It was concealing, any flames there might have been,
So none of the fires are close enough to, let me put it another way. How close are the fires to Orange County?
There's a big fire in El Dorado. It's called the El Dorado fire in, I think it's Yucaipa, which is, I think it's in Riverside County, which is directly east of Orange, but it's blowing. It blew a lot of smoke and ash towards Orange County.
I only ask because I wonder if the various and sundry COVIDiots and mask holes might be willing to put on a mask for that, or will their asthma keep them from breathing with a mask on with that too?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that. I actually golfed yesterday in L.A. County, and it was pretty smoky. And I found that I usually don't wear the mask the whole time I golf. I just wear it like when I'm near a lot of people, like on a tee or something like that, and I take it off otherwise, But I actually found that it was more comfortable to wear it yesterday golfing than not, just because of the smoke. It was just very difficult to breathe. The smoke got worse overnight, so it was even worse this morning than it was yesterday. And I normally try to exercise a very, very vigorous kind of exercise indoors. I can't do it when it's smoky because I'll get like exercise-induced asthma. My nose will start running. It'll run for like 2 or 3 days in a row if I do that. So I just had to lay low on the vigorous exercise, unfortunately. And this is indoor exercise. I'm not talking jogging outside. I'm talking you know, elliptical type of machine indoors. Can't do that when it's smoky. And there's really no end in sight to this thing because I don't think they have any containment. The fire near where I am is burning, I think, near Monrovia, the hills above Monrovia. If anybody knows L.A., the next city over from Monrovia, I think, is like Arcadia. And then the next one over to the west is Pasadena. Then you have La Cañada, then La Crescenta, where I am. And, you know, I don't know how the fire started. I don't think they know how the Bobcat fire started. The one down in Orange County, the El Dorado fire, started because of a gender reveal.
Yeah, it's no surprise that fire started in Orange County fire.
Right, right. What morons.
I mean, has anybody, so we know who those two idiots are?
Yes, there's three people involved, I think. The pregnant mother, and then the father, I assume, and then a friend.
Are they going to be charged with a crime?
They sure as hell should be. I don't think there's a crime called, you know, felony stupidity, but there should be.
Negligence, right, Rick?
Yeah, it'd be probably criminal negligence. I guess you have to show that
the doing or failure to do of things that a normally prudent person, a reasonably prudent person, would do or not do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, even if they're not charged criminally, they're going to get fined to the hilt, I'm sure. You know?
Are you saying the new baby is going to be? It will probably still be paying the fine off.
Maybe the new baby should be called El Dorado, since that's the name of the fire, right? Why not, huh?
Yeah, well, my county is pretty much FUBAR. I'm in northern Clackamas County, but the rest of it's all pretty much on fire.
Is that Portland, is it?
Say again?
You're in Portland, right, Chris?
Yeah. So just south of Portland, and it's horrible. Tens of thousands of people at this point.
I've heard that 10% of the state's been evacuated or is under evacuation orders.
That would not surprise me.
Where the hell do you go?
I heard 500,000.
Yeah, 500,000. Where do 500,000 people relocate to?
Well, I'll tell you what. Speaking of that, I noticed that last night traffic was insane around my... I wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah.
But I had to pick up my dog from ear surgery, so traffic was horrible then. But right around in my neighborhood here, there was nonstop cars.
Mm. I think you got a lot of smoke up there, Chris?
Oh, it's horrible. I just took a dog out for a half-hour walk, and it's really thick, acrid.
You almost have to get your dog a mask as well, I think.
I guess so.
Weather, huh?
Yeah.
Or conditions, rather. Jeez. Yeah, I mean,
I've seen different reports here, conflicting reports. Well, you know, just like everything else in Portland, right? It's left wing versus right wing. Everything's politicized, obviously, right?
Even a fire.
No difference. Yes.
Which is absurd.
Well, you know, have maggots started? Or they're, you know, the Oregon State Police have been putting out alerts begging people to stop with the calls that Antifa is starting all the fires.
Well,
I guess they've been inundated with shitty calls like that.
Oh,
now,
geez.
I did find a site where I saw two of the fires that are listed of the maybe six or seven that are burning.
Mm-hmm.
One of them says human-related.
Yeah.
Now, it could be an accident like the idiot in Orange County, right? Then another one is under arson investigation, but that hasn't been conclusive yet. So I don't know what to – I mean, The Intercept was the one that reported the Oregon police, state police have begged people to stop with the bullshit Antifa calls.
Yeah, the thing about arson with forest fires, I mean, arson is one of the hardest crimes to prove anyway. And with a forest fire
– oh, it's brutal.
Proving arson is damn near impossible unless somebody – it catches them red-handed, pretty much.
Yeah, and I guess a friend of mine, who's kind of my money manager, he did say he has a close friend who is a state police officer, and they did say they found a group of, I don't know if they're kids or what, but and somebody did call in and reported that they did see a group of folks actually setting fire on their property.
Oh, my.
You know, how truthful is it? I mean, is that person a maggot? My friends, the guy that called that in, was he a maggot? I don't know. There's lots of them in Clackamas County. It's full of them.
And Dave, number 11, just let me know. Air quality index in Clackamas is 357.
Whoa. So 200 is considered hazardous to human health?
So I shouldn't really be going outside at all?
No. Yeah, you know, the thing is, when you have your air conditioning on, you can still, some of that still comes in the house, I notice, you know?
Well, yeah, because your air conditioner doesn't have a PM 2.5 or an ultra-fine filter.
Right, right, yeah.
Well, mine doesn't, and mine's one of those little units, because I live in a small apartment now, and I have to crack the window open in order to get to put the vent out there. It's bad. It's actually cold outside, right? And Sparky, I'm sure it's like that by you too, where the sun's blocked. So, you know, it's actually
My air conditioner hasn't run in days.
Yeah.
Here in Eugene, the outside temperature right now is 62 degrees. I had the weather forecast up just a bit ago. 62 degrees, 59% humidity, air quality at 355. And there were a couple of people caught over by the Fern Lake Recreation Area. Guy started a fire. The people that saw him managed to stomp it out. Mm. And they've caught the guy, and he's now in the county hotel. But they haven't said any political affiliation. But they did post a picture, and he looks like he could very easily be wearing a maggot hat. He does not look like a Black Lives Matter supporter, i.e. he's white.
Yeah.
And looks stupid.
Does he have a shaved head by chance?
Close cropped hair.
Okay.
Which most of the Antifa people I've met up with seem to be almost hippie-ish. But then, in my mind, anybody who's a United States citizen that isn't Antifa should sneak into some other country like, the Philippines?
Yeah, being anti-fascist is more American than apple pie or baseball.
Well, the problem the problem is the police probably regard the fascists as better Americans because they themselves are fascists, a lot of them anyway. So,
well, I like the picture that was posted the other day of all the soldiers sitting in an airplane holding onto their parachutes and saying, this is what anti-fascists looked like in 1942.
Well, that and just as a concept, there's a reason. You never see cops busting a white supremacist riot.
Right.
It's the same reason you never see Bruce Wayne and Batman in the same room.
Great point. Well, fucker in Kenosha, or the Illinois resident who was driven to fucking Kenosha by his mother. What's up with her, man? She needs to be charged.
She should be charged. If she knew that he was transporting a prohibited firearm, prohibited to him anyway, across state lines, that's probably aiding and abetting a violation of the federal
I don't know about y'all out there, but we've got billboards all over here, all over in West Virginia, that say, commit a federal firearms crime, that's 5 extra years on the sentence. Or commit a crime with a firearm, that's 5 extra years. Automatic. And, Brother Deacon Asa just provided some fodder for consideration. How much do you want to bet at least some of these fires are started by some dead-ender maggots in an orchestrated effort to own the libs in California and the West Coast in general? Oh, especially up Oregon way. But here's the thing, and this is where I get a little bit flummoxed. A lot of these fires are not burning in the liberal Biden country.
Not in the cities.
They're burning in maggot country.
Yeah.
And yet, Nitwit Nero, and wow, does that term apply, especially with these fires, doesn't have shit to say.
No, he doesn't. You would expect with the conflagration that we're experiencing that the leader of the country would be more interested in what's going on. But you know, those are Democratic states. They don't like me. They didn't vote for me.
Yeah, but he apparently has no working knowledge whatsoever of the way the demographics play out in places like Washington and Oregon and California.
Well, of course he doesn't. No.
I don't think he does. We're just shithole states. That's it.
Yeah.
So, Roger, how far are you? I mean, you're there in Eugene, and I'm just looking. How far are you from that Holiday Farm fire? Directly to your east.
About 40 miles, actually, from what I can gather from the front edge of the fire line. But the edge of the Class 2 evacuation zone, which is get your car packed and be ready to leave, is only about 15 miles. So they were anticipating that the easterly flowing winds would continue to push it on down the McKenzie River Canyon. Now, the McKenzie River is a tributary of the Willamette that enters the Willamette just at the north edge of Eugene. So it's a river that flows to the east, headed up into the Cascades, right from the Eugene-Springfield area. Eugene is the west side of Highway 5. Springfield is the east side of Highway 5. But you really can't tell any difference when you go driving through. The very first evacuation center was at the Thurston, either high school or middle school grounds. And Thurston is just a little bit to the east of Springfield, again, a very adjacent town. And yesterday, they moved that evacuation from the Thurston school to the Springfield High School because of the problems that they were thinking they might have to do an evacuation of Thurston if the fire continued pushing west. So it's close. We've had a tremendous amount of ash fall here. 2 days ago when I went out, it was almost a half inch deep built up on my windshield wipers. But none of the ash that seems to have fallen seems to have still been viable heat-wise when it hit the ground. It's just a little black or gray specks that are landing around. And I went out and washed my tomatoes off and pepper plants and all that earlier today. Sorry for the cough. I quit smoking 9 months ago, and I am now getting my smoker's cough back. I'm not even going to try to clean up the back patio or anything like that. And just prior to this starting, we'd been doing a bunch of canning outside. So my tomato squeezer and the stainless steel bowls and the tables and all that are all covered with a fine layer of gray ash. I'm not sure what my solar panels are doing, but they almost look like a white sheet's been laid over the top of them. But I'm not even going to start trying to clean stuff up until I see some blue sky.
Well, that makes perfect sense. I just had a note from Clarence, who's on the road. Speaking of tragedies, Clarence writes, I just delivered a load at the Lowe's in Lake Charles, Louisiana. Hurricane Laura destroyed this community. There's damage on every business. The homes down here are covered with blue tarps. Cleanup's going to be lasting for a long time. And for those folks, it's also a time to note that under the best of circumstances, FEMA's as useless as tits on a boar. We have personal experience with that. when your house has been destroyed, you don't need a fucking loan from the SBA. You need a check.
Yeah.
You need straight up, you know, not going to ask for it back money to fix your house. And do it on the double quick, because the damage just continues to accumulate if you can't.
Damn straight.
And that was back in all the Obama years when you had all that damage to your house, right, during the derecho.
Yeah.
So it was the Obama FEMA.
Yeah, and we got two nights in a hotel in a motel.
Hmm.
And the next and the next time it rained, the rain just came in the house.
Oh geez.
And it stayed that way until we could round up the money to pay for a new roof.
Oh man. How long did you deal with that, Bob? With no rain going through the
2 years.
Shit. And you still managed to keep your program on the air?
Yeah.
My, oh my, what determination, man. That's effing amazing.
It was, and the damage, frankly, you know, we've still got bedrooms where there's no drywall. It's just a straight view past the insulation up to the roof.
Mm.
But the roof doesn't have any holes in it now.
That's good.
Massive amounts of damage.
Jeez. And all that rainwater, I mean, how do you divert the rainwater once it falls into your house? I guess you don't.
You don't. And you can blue tarp till hell freezes over, but as any plumber can tell you, water will seek its own level.
Oh, yeah.
That's why
I'm not a plumber.
And it will find its way under those blue tarps that Clarence is talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And the longer you have to wait, the greater the damage becomes.
Jeez.
Little backstory on what Steve posted in the Skype chat. The mother, son, and either her mother-in-law or her mother were living in the house. The husband was off to get a trailer to begin the evacuation. The fire came down on him while the husband was gone. He blew by a roadblock to go try to see if he could find him. Came across a woman who looked to be wearing a bikini in the road. He stopped to help her, and she didn't want to get in the car because he was going to continue further up the road. And a little bit more conversation, and apparently he said something, "I got to go find my wife." And she looked up at him and said, "I am your wife." And he hauled her out and then tried to go back. And the boy who's been identified and found, I don't know about the mother-in-law person yet, but she got flown, I believe, up to Portland and then got taken somewhere else because of the number of burns on her body.
Jesus.
But when your wife is so burned that you don't recognize her when she's lying in the road, she's in bad shape.
That's horrific.
And you know what? I blame Donald Trump for this. And the reason I blame Trump for this is because he has so broken our government that it can't do anything.
Well, I think he's already achieved. This is Darlene. I think he's already achieved his autocratic rule. You know, if you think about it, he's not being called to account for anything. And I've been thinking about it today. He's got an attorney general who will essentially be his henchman and do whatever he wants. I think he's already achieved autocratic rule. He's not, the balance of powers is not functioning to keep him in check. So
no,
Darlene,
we're already there, people. It's what we've been talking about. It's what we've been talking about for almost 4 years. We entered a constitutional crisis the moment his hand came off the Bible.
You're right. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. You've been saying that from the get-go, that we're in a constitutional crisis. We've been in one. So you have others that are very slow on the uptake, like, one of my senator, Richard Blumenthal, who I don't know where he stands on this now, but, you know, he was talking about we're going to be in a constitutional crisis, or we're going, you know, it's like, no, we're already here. We've been here.
In another constitutional crisis.
Well, it's a continuation of the same constitutional crisis, just different facts, you know?
Or different chapters of the same book.
Yeah, no kidding.
Isn't there or shouldn't there be a standard or a consistency of service in terms of the various agencies from administration to administration?
And if unless not, you destroy the civil service, Scotty. He basically has gutted the State Department and gutted other government agencies.
Billable, I tend to, I agree, but I would add to what you just said. And that is that FEMA is also a plaything of the Congress. Because remember, every time there's a disaster and the Democrats try to put forward some sort of supplemental to deal with that disaster, there will always be some goddamned conservative Republican with the family values from Texas or Kentucky or Indiana or some shit forlorn place like that who'll stand up and say, well, we can't take care of them people unless we cut the budget somewhere else.
Right, like happened with Superstorm Sandy.
Bingo.
Yeah,
and we're looking down the barrel of this is one of the worst years in terms of superstorms, hurricanes, tropical storms. We're looking at something here on the East Coast, and her name is Sally. She's churning off. There's like three or four other disturbances that are occurring. They're all named, so we're into the S's with Sally.
Jesus, we're in the S's, and I'm worried.
S's?
We're into the S's and we haven't even gotten to mid-September in hurricane season.
Exactly. I mean, there are meteorologists that are saying we're going to have to go to the Greek alphabet eventually. They're thinking it's that bad in terms of the number of hurricanes. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So Maybe go to the double A's.
Let me ask a question.
I'm the double D's. So we'll see.
Well, I could see going to the first one for Aaron because that starts with an AA.
Yeah.
But if they do the next one as Betty, people are saying that it was going against Biden.
All right. All right.
And that's kind of, you know. Again, we're talking about...
I needed that.
And there's something about Biden concerns me a little bit. I think, obviously, if we're able to get Biden and Harris in January, the work has only just begun because we're going to have to hold Trump and all of his grifters to account. And I'm worried because Biden's already thrown it out there. He's already said, well, you know, going after a previous president's typically never a good idea. So he's already stated that and launched that that idea. And I think that he has to be, you know.
He has to shut the fuck up.
What his intentions are.
Leave it to the Attorney General. The Attorney General will decide.
If I may be allowed to finish. Whoever the Attorney General is, yes, but also like Bob was saying, we're going to have to put. I think Biden could be convinced. He might be easily convinced otherwise that you know Trump would not have been but for George W. Bush. That something has to be done, and he could be just saying that in order to basically get elected and not rock too many boats. That's my hope, but
well, I don't want to get the nasty little maggot lurkers who hang out on the fringes of this program. I don't want to smarten up the chumps, but maybe, and you know, there's a string of conditions precedent that have to be satisfied before we ever get to this. Maybe if Biden gets into office, protest should be targeted. And, you know, let's put 100,000 people around the Department of Justice. Charge Trump. Charge Barr.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
that assumes that Trump and Barr aren't pardoned by Pence on Trump's way out the door.
Or we focus on the states. New York.
Well, that's what James in Illinois just said at the very moment you said it. Let the states handle it. The Attorney General of the state of New York is an able professional.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Bob, is that just not another example how the Horn family just is constantly on the same page?
Oh,
How do we do it?
I don't know.
It's a concept called quantum entanglement, I think. Is that what it is?
Or synchronicity.
You get the memo. You get the email. The daily talk.
Scott! Shh!
Oh, I'm sorry.
you're going to tell the maggots.
Ixnay on the M.O. Ixnay on the M.O. May, Scott Skay.
You're gonna give away the gay agenda. Yeah.
For the recipes. The recipes. I'm not talking.
Don't talk about the gay agenda either, Scott. Come on.
It's on the super double. Well,
I think dark web. Yeah, I think you're right, Steve. And Steve, obviously, we're in states that are far more progressive blue states. I mean, we have Attorney General. AG Tong, who is, he was an immigrant. He and his family almost got deported when he was a child.
He's
awesome. Yeah. We can get Tong together with Keisha James.
No, Letitia or they call
Letitia.
Her
my sorry, Letitia. Letitia James. She's awesome. We can get those two together. We can try to get attorneys general together to pursue and do it vigorously, because we've got some really great attorney generals here on the East Coast. Darlene. Blumenthal was not a bad attorney general. Go ahead. Yeah.
Darlene.
Yeah.
I'm going to
attorneys.
Play
attorneys. Attorneys general.
Attorneys general. I'm going to
That's
play.
That's what I said.
You said attorney generals.
No, I said attorneys general.
No, you didn't.
All right. I apologize, back to the tape. That's what I thought I said.
Darlene, just chill. I'm kidding.
He's playing.
Hey, I'm a hack. I'm a hack at the art of word knowing.
Oh,
I think that's hardly true.
Say
I was thinking attorneys general.
Oh, you have.
Listen, cut me a break. I'm the only girl here. Jesus Christ. Go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
You're like me. Your brain says one thing, and your mouth says, that's not what I'm saying.
Stop projecting, Steve.
I have nearly 17 years of experience with everything you're all talking about.
Mm-hmm. So, Steve and Rick, I have a question for you. I've been gaming out the election, and let's just say that both sides have competent lawyers, phalanxes full, right?
Well, they will.
Trump's going to try to stop the counts, the mail-in counts, as soon as he possibly can, and we can only hope that Biden is capable enough to keep those going, continuances, whatever the hell. But the way that I see the end game, the only end game in town is that all the court cases are going to roll up to the Supreme Court, and basically the history of Western civilization is in the hands of John Roberts. Am I wrong?
Well, let's hope it doesn't come down to that, because the odds are against the Democrats in that situation.
I don't agree.
Okay.
I don't agree.
Okay. Oh, well, okay.
I'm not – you don't agree with the premise or what?
No, I just as I sit here, I'm like, I don't even know what the hell I'm disagreeing to, because it's just like, no, but we're living in such weirdo coloring out of the lines times that I don't have. I don't think it's going to end up like anyone else thinks, because we don't have any idea. I do want to throw a question out to Bob and also to everybody else. You know, think of the tradition on Inauguration Day, where the sitting president hosts the president-elect at the White House, and they have their – yeah, they have their breakfast or brunch, and then they head together up to the Capitol. Does anyone see that happening?
No. Hell no.
No.
What do you see happening? I'm curious. I don't have any clue. What do you see happening?
I've been researching this. The only negative ride from the White House to the Capitol on Inauguration Day with the outgoing and the incoming was Herbert Hoover and Roosevelt, I believe, did not utter more than a word or two. How many blocks is it from the White House to the fucking Capitol, Bob?
About 10.
You've walked them.
Yeah.
I've walked them. Hell, what am I saying? The only scenario I see on that ride from the White House involves a heavy dose of Thorazine and not for Mr. Biden. You know,
I don't think it's going to get there, Scott. I don't think
it's going to happen.
I don't think Biden will even go to the White House because certainly Trump will not invite him there. I think Biden will go right from wherever he's staying, and they usually stay in Octagon House, which is across the street. If he stays there, wherever Biden is, I think he'll go directly to the Capitol. And I would not be surprised if Trump just doesn't show up for the inauguration.
Oh, he won't.
Well, Trump's a coward. Yeah, I was saying Trump is that a coward, the other so day. Won't he just go ahead and leave? Trump is a coward. He'll leave. He'll turn around and say, I got ripped off, that this was a hoax. This was a rigged election. And then he can kind of go off and continue to tweet and try to scuttle the new president.
You know what he's going to do,
I see
Darlene?
That as being a possibility.
You know what he's going to do? He's going to start the Trump network, which is why – that's the reason he ran, remember, in 2016 to begin with. He never wanted to be president. Once he got elected
– Well, yeah, I know. He realized,
wow, this is kind of cool. So all for the last 4 years, he's wanted to be called president, but he doesn't want to actually do the job.
Yeah, I know.
The guy's never worked a fucking day in his life. He's never worked a day. He is 100% – total fraud.
I'd like to add just another little micro quantum of evidence to the general understanding of what a shitty attempt at a member of the human race Donald Trump is. Over at Vanity Fair, they did an interview with the daughter of Michael Cohen. And I'm going to try. Emily Jane Fox has the story. And I'm going to put this in terms without trying to come off as some sort of skeevy guy. Because this is a skeevy enough story as it is. The daughter of Michael Cohen, Samantha, is by now an exceptionally beautiful young woman.
She also has a disability.
I did not know this.
Well, just based on what I saw. But go ahead.
She gave an interview to Vanity Fair about the relationship between her dad and Donald Trump. And so, just reading from the text of the story. It was 2012. Michael Cohen had taken his family to Bedminster, New Jersey for a day of playing tennis and hanging by the pool at the club owned by his then boss, Donald Trump. That summer day felt like all the others before it, standing alongside Trump outside the pool area, discussing what Cohen writes in his book was some pressing business matter like the size of the breasts of a woman sunbathing on a lounge chair. Somehow, the reporter writes, Trump's attention was diverted to another skirt walking off a tennis court. I feel dirty just reading this, and I'm not offering this for its prurient value. This is fucking evidence.
Look at that piece of ass,
Cohen recalls Trump saying as he whistled and pointed.
I'd love some of that.
Michael Cohen then informed Donald Trump that he was talking about his then 15-year-old daughter, Samantha.
That's your daughter? When did she get so hot?
And then Samantha walks up to her dad, and Trump tells her to kiss him on the cheek. And then looks at this 15-year-old girl and says,
when did you get such a beautiful figure? You know, in a few years, I'm going to be dating one of your friends.
You know, I'm sorry. God, you know, this.
Darling.
Elijah Cummings, who was also one of our great black leaders that we lost recently.
Or just great leaders, period.
Along with John Lewis, had mentioned Michael Cohen's daughter. And how I believe her. Because you could see she's in a horrible position because her father obviously screwed up big time. But it's her father. So she was right there walking into the courts with him when he was being prosecuted. So we've got somebody who is in the White House who clearly is a pedophile.
Precisely. That's why I brought it up, Darlene.
He's a pedophile.
And this goes to what, you know, what was it? A couple of days ago, we had the story where Dan Coats, the former director, his first director of national intelligence, said he came to the conclusion that Putin had something on Trump. Well, in a way, the Steele dossier reference to the PP tapes was kind of a diversion, because even as that was coming out, I was seeing in other quarters that the real damning evidence was video that that the Russian security services had of him having sex with underage girls in St. Petersburg, girl or girls. So we've got his references to his own daughter, and now we have this reference from 2012 that Samantha Cohen herself has offered up, and they describe her in the article. Samantha, now 24 and a straight-talking, steely graduate of the University of Pennsylvania like Trump's own daughters, told me that she believes her dad had a sort of Stockholm syndrome. She discussed why she thinks her father remained loyal, Ivanka's iciness, her friendship with younger daughter Tiffania, what happened the day federal agents executed search warrants on her home, and what it's like to be at the center of a political storm beyond her control.
I feel sorry for that girl, because I think I believe her 100%. I think she's telling the truth.
I do too.
And
well, look how he behaved around the pageant contestants, most of whom were under 19 years of age.
Yeah.
And remember who one of his best friends was.
Jeffrey Epstein. Sure.
Like attracts like. And Peter Strzok is releasing his own book. Despite everything, the Republicans have done a good job trashing his reputation. Peter Strzok said that the Steele dossier, there were things within the Steele dossier that they verified, and other things that were wrong. But there was a shit ton of information in the Steele dossier that they haven't proved one way or the other via the FBI. Okay? So I still think the Steele dossier is something that may continue to yield new information, important information to us.
Let me ask a question. When Bob was reading that from that piece, what came to my mind was a couple things. The first thing was, what would a Trumpanzee say? And a Trumpanzee would say, "Oh, fake news, fake news." And then it occurred to me, I don't think a Trumpanzee would say that. A Trumpanzee would say, even if it were true, they didn't care. And why do I say that? This is the same group of people who said that about Roy Moore down there in Alabama. Yes, they first of all, they said it wasn't, they didn't believe it. But if had it been true, it wouldn't have mattered. One of these days, I hope, all of these maggots will realize at this point, they're not owning the libs. He's not owning me. He looks like a fool to me, and they look like nothing but fools to me. And yes, I include my mother in that. A fool. And fine, if that makes you, you know, that makes you feel better that you think it bugs me, great. Guess what? He's a scumbag.
Samantha Cohen said in response to questionings about that story, she said, you know, if you can hit on a 15-year-old, I'm pretty sure there's something wrong with you. And when you allow someone with that little integrity to be in the most powerful office in the country, that sets the tone for the rest of the country's culture. And then asked about that particular incident at Bedminster, she said that wasn't what stood out to her. What stood out to her was the way that he constantly belittled her father, because generally speaking, little girls love their daddies. What she remembers most of that transaction is him looking at her father and saying, "Thank God she got those looks from her mother. She certainly didn't get them for you."
Well, I mean, I think she obviously got her high perceptive abilities from her mother, too. Her ability to perceive. She clearly loves her father, but she can see that this is an extremely intelligent young woman, and she can see where her father fucked up. And maybe Samantha's the critical person that can make us say, well, maybe Michael Cohen has had a come to Jesus moment. Because I sit there and I listen to him, and Michael Cohen is like, you know, don't forget, he was on the phone threatening everybody with that kind of Italian, mafia kind of lilt to his voice, that he's going to break their necks or break their heads or whatever.
Bullshit bravado.
You know what?
But that's very good. That's a great point, Chris. It's bravado. It's absolute bravado.
Darlene, it occurs to me. I forgot what the fuck I was going to say. That's what occurred to me.
Can I just, hey, Bob, can I just switch gears real quick on two topics? Just really quick. This is a great conversation.
You can do anything you want. It's a regular joint.
I just wanted to update you on the situation with the schools, based on my call with you on Wednesday. Literally, like within minutes after you and I got off the phone about what happened with the New Milford school systems, well, my sister got a message that they were closing down the New Milford school systems, strictly all straight remote learning, until further notice, indefinitely, because of the contact tracing. So even though it just took one kid, it was an eighth grader, come to discover it was an eighth grader. And because the contact tracing is so complex, because it's involving busing, bus drivers, everything, that they're like, this is going to take more than 2 days for us to figure out who this eighth grader came into contact with. So now the entire New Milford school system has been shut down indefinitely. And my sister was correct. It was the Naugatuck High School was shut down here in Connecticut due to kids testing positive for COVID-19. And there was another school or school system shut down in Connecticut. And again, we have among the lowest, you know, under 1% reinfection rates in the country. So I just wanted to update you on that. So,
well, that was responsible and rational, wasn't it?
It was indeed. Like my friend down the street, who, thank God I have somebody on the street who's actually a real progressive like me, otherwise shoot myself. She said it's a, you know, and this is, you know, back to the Cold War era, i.e. the USSR, Russia and the United States. It's like the domino effect. It's a domino. She said it's a domino effect in terms of what's happening with the school systems. So I wanted to update you on that, as I said I would. The other thing is that sometimes the police can actually, well, can actually do good things. This is kind of a funny side story that I wanted to tell you about. But literally, probably about 20 minutes away from me, there's a town called Plymouth. I guess I didn't know this, but they have a meat processing plant in Plymouth. And apparently, a bull escaped the processing plant.
Oh, dear.
And this has been going on for like 2 or 3 weeks. This bull is highly aggressive. And they call it a beefalo. It's a beefalo. As opposed to a buffalo, it's a beefalo because you know what they were going to do to it. Well, this bull fucking knew what it was going to, what was going to happen to it. It escaped. The police, the state police, the local police, they cannot catch this thing. They can't catch it.
Connecticut, because Darlene, with a story like that in your modern times, you need to drag out your complete works of Mark Twain. And because, of course, Mark Twain was a resident of Connecticut. Bridgeport, wasn't it?
Yes, he was. Hartford.
Hartford,
actually.
Hartford.
Beautiful. It's a museum now. You can go visit there. Yeah.
He's got a story about an escaped elephant. And it will devastate you.
Yes. I don't even want to hear it. I don't even want to hear it. But
go find it.
It breaks my heart. But this, I'm like, look, if this bull, and I don't know what kind of a bull, if it's a Jersey bulls are very aggressive. I used to go walking further down the road when I was able to do it. There was a Jersey bull at this farm I used to walk near. This thing would come up to me and growl at me. Like it was fenced in, but it would see me and it would growl at me. And I'm like, holy shit, what is this animal doing? And it was very scary. The farmer who I knew could only control this bull by using his tractor to get it into the particular paddock that it wanted it to be in. Well, look, they did it. This happened with a cow, a female that had also escaped a meat processing plant somewhere else here in the country, jumped off of the back of the truck when they were hauling the animals to be processed and was running on the highway. They shouldn't have done this, but they euthanized it. They killed it. But she knew. This bull knows.
By the way,
it knows what's going to happen to it.
And a beefalo, by the way, is a hybrid between a bull, a bovine male and a buffalo.
Thank you. Okay, that explains it because I'm like,
and
wow,
this huge.
Is
okay.
I didn't. They're huge. And this thing is smart. It's been evading the police. It's been evading. So guess what the police union here in Connecticut did? This is good news. They did a Okay. It's an animal, right? It's a GoFundMe page. They've already raised $6,000. To make sure that this animal is captured humanely and transported down to Florida to, I think it's called Critters Creek, which is a sanctuary for these kinds of animals. If this thing is smart enough to escape, you know, from a fucking processing plant and the police and no one can catch this thing, there's been sightings and everything else. What they've done is they've set up, an area where they put grain. And the beefalo, they've called him Buddy. So once you've named something, you've attached to it. And that's me. I get attached. Once I name, it's called Buddy the Beefalo. So they've gone ahead and they are, it's been drawn to the grain, it's eating the grain, so they're setting up fencing around this grain paddock.
Tell me it's Mickey Finn grain.
I have no idea what the grain is, but it's drawing this you know, this bad boy in. And they're going to try to capture. I can't imagine they're going to have to probably sedate this animal and take it down to Florida.
That's what I was wondering. If maybe the grain was treated.
But I'm glad they're doing that, because if the animal's that, it knows that animal's smart. And you know, you talk about all of the grilling and barbecuing that you do of meat. And I'm a meat eater. I hate it. I hate the fact that I wish I could be a vegetarian. I tried it, but I can't do it because of my muscular dystrophy. I need animal protein to feed my muscles. So it's just something it's just who I am. But if an animal like that is smart enough to know it's going to be processed like that, it's going to be killed and chewed up, it deserves to live. Taking it one step further. Look at how this is the police union that did this. They're treating a freaking beefalo, a hybrid that you just educated me about, that is a cross between a bull and a buffalo. They're treating it better than they would treat a human being or George Floyd or anything like that. It's like, wow, what's going on? Where our priorities are all mixed up. So I just wanted to throw that out there. So it's still loose. It's on the loose in Plymouth, Connecticut. All the more power to it. And I'm glad to hear that at least the police union is doing something good.
For a change.
And they're trying to save the animal for a change.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hey, I just wanted to let you know. I'll keep you updated.
Well, no, do please keep us updated. But you mentioned another community there in Connecticut, and it has a special relevance for me. And that's Naugatuck.
Naugatuck, yes.
It might come as a surprise to you to find out that there is or maybe we've even talked about this, there's a Naugatuck, West Virginia. It was a coal camp at the beginning of the 20th century, and it's where my father's mother was born.
And our Naugatuck in Connecticut is very industrial. That's like when you go by Naugatuck on the highway, Route 8, what you see is smokestacks.
That sounds like industrial. It must certainly be some sort of indigenous name. I don't know if it is.
Yes.
But it sounds it should be. And down here, of course, Granny always said, Naugatuck. I was born in Naugatuck.
We have a lot of indigenous names for lakes. Even Connecticut derived from an indigenous name.
And what I'm wondering is, you know, did some nutmegger industrialist come down, coal baron, and name that coal camp? Or I simply don't know, because it's like up in northern Wisconsin. I was shocked when I got up there. There's a community up there, or a county or something, called Marengo, Marengo. And lo and behold, there's also a Marengo County, Alabama. And those things just fascinate me. I mean, the distance between the Tug Fork River that separates West Virginia and Kentucky and Connecticut is considerable. So I can't help wondering how those two communities share a common name. Of course, Naugatuck in West Virginia is barely even a wide spot on the road now, but it was a booming coal camp once upon a time. And it was in the heart, at the beginning of the 20th century, of what was referred to as Bloody Mingo. And of course, Mingo is an indigenous name.
Yeah.
But the labor violence there was profound. And so I just, you know, when you mentioned Naugatuck, Connecticut, I couldn't help wondering. I've got some emails to share here. We've passed into the third hour of the program. Brandon says, the orange fecal discharge has been using the word insurrection a lot of late in regards to the opposition. And I wonder if he'll declare a state of insurrection if he loses. Brandon notes, I so wanted to write when he loses, but I did grow up in the north of Ireland. And that I take it from Brendan, imposes a certain unwillingness to be overly optimistic, and I understand that. It kind of goes hand in hand with, you know, hillbilly.
Bleakness of outlook.
He has been making noise and using the word insurrection a bunch, and he uses it in particular with anyone speaking out against him. So, you know, nothing is off the table. Nothing surprises me anymore. I don't think it surprises this community anymore. Going back to Samantha Cohen, Lee in New York writes, I thought of 15-year-old girls as attractive when I was a 15-year-old boy. And how true that is. James in Illinois pointing out, subject line, Epstein, I believe that Melania was procured by that slime ball. I would not be surprised in the least. Let me check over. I have so many different platforms to check that people reach out to the program on. Tamara has sent her greetings and hallucinations to Billable Rick and Scott and Joey, and said, you know, hard to believe that was a year ago. I know, when Joey wrote that to me, I was like, what, really? A year? Yes, it was. And so, by the way, yeah, we're into the third hour. Joey kindly put another challenge on the table. And it would be nice to knock that out. It's a $50 challenge. And we've got 410 to finish the week. So that's 10 from Wednesday, 200 from yesterday, 200 for this evening. We could at least get finished with Wednesday and most of half of yesterday if we knock that challenge out. I'll be, you know, and I'm always candid with the community here. I'm getting eaten alive right now. We here are getting eaten alive. We don't live the life of Riley as it is. I mean, Jesus, we went 2 years with it raining inside the house, and still kept the program on the air, as Billable Rick noted. But the bottom line here is that, and we've talked about it some, and it works within the general discussion of how terrifying COVID-19 is. I don't know. Somebody's echoing right now. But, you know, Darlene, you sent along an article that said some athletes may show signs of heart inflammation after recovering from COVID-19.
It's 15%. That's pretty high.
Yeah, it is.
That's significant.
And when you think about, like, say, my beloved Mountaineers, who had 28 members of the football team that were COVID positive, and yet the Big 12 still wants to play football. But to finish out the idea, how to put this? I feel like I'm going to do whatever I can to try to get our son in his own place over in Beckley. Not because it wears me out driving him back and forth. It does. You know, Bob Kincaid, amateur Uber driver. And I'll be back on the road tonight at midnight and tomorrow at midnight and Sunday at midnight. And then with my luck, I'll find out that his next work week is going to be the midnight shift itself, which means driving him to work at midnight and going and getting him at 6 and 7 o'clock in the morning. But beyond that aspect of it, he is working in a convenience store where every day when I pick him up, I watch a parade of COVIDiots and mask holes walk through the door, and he is forbidden by corporate from even asking them to put on a mask. That's how irresponsible this corporation is.
Extremely irresponsible. And Bob, by the way, Connecticut derives from the Indian word is Quinnatakoot. Quinnatakoot, it begins with a Q, and it's beautiful. Quinnatakoot, I'm probably butchering the pronunciation, but it means beside the long tidal river.
Aww.
And I wish they had kept Quinnatakoot because it's so pretty.
Yeah, but that's where
Connecticut derives from.
The Elizabethan English-speaking mouth couldn't wrap its tongue around native words.
Right, and I'm butchering it more than likely. The Native American tongue could say it more beautifully than me.
My guess
that's a heathen language to the British.
So. Yeah, my guess is the river that runs through Charleston down and empties into the Ohio River, another native word, the beautiful river. Ohio meaning beautiful.
Yeah.
Odd given the passage of time. Having seen Steubenville. That's a joke. that river is, we hear say it's Knaw. It's the Knaw. Knaw. We almost get three full syllables out of it, but not quite. If we could figure out a way to make it one syllable, we would. Knaw. Knawha. Mm-hmm. It's probably something like the Knawaha, and I have no idea what it means. But I think about that in terms of, like up in west central Wisconsin, there's a beautiful river called the Kinnickinnick. And I remember Ferg and I being there.
Kinnickinnick.
Ferg and me being there and saying something.
Did you have a Kinnickinnick
something sells. I remember looking at Ferg and saying, "You know, look at this. I just like to believe that the native language from which that word comes means." This is an awfully lovely little spot. Why don't we just stay here for a while? But it turns out it's the Anishinaabe word I was told for tobacco, which was used ceremonially and seen to be sacred. So just to wrap up what I was saying in terms of trying to finish this week, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I gotta and see, he hasn't drawn a paycheck yet. They fucked up his first paycheck, supposedly. And whenever the next pay period is, they'll catch it all up on him, whatever. But he's hell-bent on living over there and trying to set up a life with a young woman that he's met.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cherchez la femme.
Okay.
Cherchez la femme.
I see. Okay.
But,
so that explains.
Well, good for her. That's great to hear, Bob.
Well, yeah. But no, not really, because it's a judgment and mindfulness thing. Nobody around here has a job, so you know running that household will be entirely upon him.
Mm.
But you haven't
met the young lady, I said.
Oh, I have.
Oh, okay.
But that's part and parcel of it. But the other part of it is, again, he's working for a company that, if nothing else, I mean, you know, they've got a couple of signs that say #wear a mask plastered on the store, but people walk up to it, the hillbillies walk up to it and go, grunt, and go on through the door. A door that says entrance only, and after they've picked up their can of snuff or their 40 of beer or whatever, they go out the same door that, again, says entrance only. Not only will they not wear a mask, they won't bother to read which way to enter and leave the store.
And they carry flags that say, don't read to me as well?
Precisely.
Feed them.
So,
the Constitution.
Ferg will be 25 the day after Christmas.
Okay, so his brain is not developed because they're saying you need to be at least 28 before you get past the adolescent brain.
Right.
So you're doing everything you can because you obviously have your beloved that you are protecting, your wife, and
I'm trying.
You're trying desperately. And he needs to be able to make his own decisions and bear the consequences.
But here he does things like inviting people we don't know into the house.
That's not cool, yeah.
And as things are, you know, the second wave is coming. We haven't seen shit yet in West Virginia.
But that's true. That's what Fauci said.
But yeah, we're getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice says, now, I don't want to have to shut everything down here, but make no mistake about it. I believe in Jesus, and you can believe me when I say I will. And then he doesn't do anything.
You're in a terrible position.
So
there's so many things. There's so many things bearing down on you with this issue. With this issue, you know, concerning Ferg.
And I don't want to make it sound like I don't love my son. I love him with all my heart.
I know, but he's got a, you know, he's got a girlfriend now.
Bob, if you didn't say this stuff, it would suggest that. But the fact that you say it, and you say it with lamentation. Ooh, shit! I used to. Okay, where in the U.S. tonight would somebody say something like, and you say it with lamentation?
Only on the horn.
Only so on
certainly
the horn.
Not Fox News.
What the hell?
What the hell kind of language?
What the hell? What is that? What is that? What is that? Antifa ease? Are you speaking?
No. Oddly enough, because everything eventually intersects. Ferg was watching Idiocracy today, and I walked by just as he was getting his diagnosis from the doctor. I'm sorry, man, but it says here that your shit's fucked up. You talk like, and I'm going to use a word, forgive me, it's straight out of the movie. It says here, your shit's fucked up, you talk like a fag, and you're basically tarded.
Tarded?
Yeah.
I haven't watched that movie. I must be the only person in this group that has it.
Oh my God, Rick, you have to.
And
so,
I do.
So like a minute of dialogue passes by, and not sure, the protagonist says something back to the doctor, and he responds, now see, there's that fag talk we were talking about a minute ago.
Isn't there a book of lamentations in
and,
the Bible?
Yes, but yes, to say the least, Lamentations has not been used in probably any radio show in this country today, and certainly has not been used on any programs hosted by the likes of Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, or Charlie Kirk or Laura Ingraham or any of those other geniuses of the right wing. Thank you to Charlene. Charlene has jumped in alongside Joey and Giraffe. So there's $100 in challenges on the table, and that would get us taken care of yesterday, and maybe we can make some progress, because I'm trying to explain why there seems to be so much urgency about all of this. Because on top of everything else, I got to do this. So it's and on top of, you know, paying all the damn bills. Thank you to George. George just jumped in. That's half of Joey and Giraffe's challenge. Another half that's done, and then we can start on Charlene's. And like I said, we're at 410 just to finish the week, and then I'll see.
Charlene did how much?
Charlene did 25.
Oh.
No. Charlene put forward a $50 challenge.
All right. Well, I'll meet Charlene as fellow sister of the sorority of Leeds. I'll put forward a 50. I'll match her for 50, and I was able to get a couple of paychecks in today. So I'll match Charlene for 50, and I'll throw in another 50, but I don't know if that's meeting other challenges or would be a separate challenge.
Well, let's
total for 100 for me.
Jeremy just said, here's 5 for each challenge. One just happened to get met. So that'll be $10 more on to Joey and Giraffe.
We need to slow down here. Bob's got some serious ciphering right now to do.
Yeah, that's $10 more onto Joey and Giraffe's challenge, which means there's $15 left on that, and then we'll start on yours, Darlene, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. I'll meet the 50 for Charlene, and I'm doing a $50 challenge.
Right, if you'll permit me, that's the Buddy the Beefalo challenge.
Awesome, Buddy the Beefalo. I would like to see him live. So yeah, he's pretty damn smart, and he does not take prisoners. So yeah, Buddy the Beefalo. I love that. That's the perfect challenge. And didn't you have somebody that was willing to do a challenge for any new subscriber?
Yeah, that's Tony and Chico. And he's
and is he willing to expand the challenge to people that are current subscribers but are willing to increase their subscription?
I would bet he is willing.
Okay, because I've been thinking about increasing my subscription from 10 to 20 a month. So I just wanted to throw that out there. So if that helps, let me know.
Okay, I will wait for Tony to confirm that. He listens every day, so...
Yeah, because I'm thinking like new subscribers, but also existing subscribers. If they're even if they're willing to increase by $1 or $5 or whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, I feel like you deserve a raise, at least on the subscription end, because like I live for your program. I love it, and I miss it on the weekends. And I think you're helping to keep many of us kind of sane.
Darlene, I've told you to give me a call. We can talk about shit rather than just sending emails. Okay? We can make
I like I like the use of the modifier helping to keep us kind of sane.
I hope to visit you in New York at some point, Steve.
Kind of sane.
Once I get my van.
Okay.
Bob, I'm going to have to send you a check. I noticed that my there was unauthorized activity on my PayPal account.
Oh, no.
It's been currently suspended for some reason or access limited, so... I was trying to send it to you, the don't choke on the 3-foot putt challenge that was met yesterday. So.
Oh, that's fine. Just let me know, and I'll go and haunt the mailbox.
Okay.
By the way, I have a trivia question.
It's funny you should...
Today.
Say it's fun.
One of the greatest things happened in baseball history.
Yes?
Steve, didn't you talk about it yesterday?
No.
That was a different greatest thing.
It was a different day. Yesterday was a different day, Chris.
Yeah, a different day. And I may have, but I'm going to ask it today in case nobody was listening. It happened today. Actually, it's 35 years ago.
Hmm.
So it's not Pete Rose.
Shut up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you did do that yesterday.
Pete Rose's final hit?
Yeah.
No. 41-92 and 41-93.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's the trivia question. Who was the pitcher?
Huh.
Oh, shit.
I'll say Nolan Ryan.
You said who they were playing. Shit. Well, it was the Reds. So it would have been, let's say Mario Soto?
No. He worked. He played for the Reds when he got the hit.
Oh,
you're saying what the opponent team was?
Who was the opposing pitcher?
Opposing pitcher. Okay.
Can you give us the team name again, Steve?
No.
Was it? It wasn't Tecumseh.
Eric Schaub. Eric Schaub.
Excellent.
Eric Schaub.
Said that.
Joey.
Hey, Joey.
Hey, Joey.
Now, did you look that up or did you just know it?
No. Jeffrey told me. He was sitting right here. He heard it.
Jeffrey.
Jeffrey, look it up on the internet, Joe. That's what I wanted to know.
I was like, yeah, you didn't look it up on the internet, but he did.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the funny story about that. Do you remember what he did, Steve? He did something very bizarre after giving up the hit to Rose. He actually sat down on the mound.
Sat on the mound. Well, because the applause went for 8 minutes.
Oh, there you go. He got tired.
I remember that moment. I saw that on TV. I remember that pretty well.
Hey,
that was a lamentations moment in Major League Sports.
Yes.
Hey, second time it's been used in a program in 2020. Good job, Scott.
Oh, damn.
Thank you.
Hey, Bob.
Yes,
I can't do it this week, but I'm going to do it next week. Since that trivia was met, I'm going to send you $41.92.
Oh, lovely. Thank you.
I can't right now. I will next week.
Okay, just let me know and we'll add it to the total that particular day. Hold on. There's ciphering going on.
Everyone quiet. Quiet down.
Ralph's got us down to $5 to go on Giraffe's challenge.
Oh,
And then Libby got us to finished on Giraffe's challenge, Joey and Giraffe's challenge, and $20 on the way to Darlene's challenge. So there's $30 left on that. And that is where we stand. So we got $30 to go on Darlene's challenge, and I'm trying to come up with all the So with all those challenges being met, we will have $110 to go to finish the week.
Oh, excellent. Hey, Bob, I have a question real quick, then I'm going to shut up for the rest of the night. I know your ciphering's not very good, but how are you on the Gazentas?
Oh, I can Gazenta all day long.
And I want to know if anybody knows what Bob and I are actually talking about.
I don't know what that means, no.
okay.
Two Gazenta 4, 2 times. Two Gazenta 6, 3 times.
Okay.
Two Gazenta 8, 4 times. Two Gazenta 10, 5 times. And, of course, it stems from Jethro showing his mathematical proficiencies off on the Beverly Hillbillies.
Well, that's what happens when you graduate 6th grade, Bob.
Damn right.
Graduate
6th grade.
Since.
And it was pointed out to me, you know, I refer to the fact that Jethro always had a hard time trying to figure out whether he was going to be a fry cook or a brain surgeon. But he also wanted to be a streetcar conductor so that he could wear a blue serge suit and have one of them nickel squirters. And then, of course, his never-to-be-forgotten career as a double-knot spy.
Well, he used to contemplate all that by sitting next to the cement pond.
Yeah, and then he went and become a producer, and that yielded one of the one of the most wonderful lines ever to come out of, especially if you've ever loved acting or anything like that. One of the most wonderful lines ever to come out of the Beverly Hillbillies, where he walks up and says, "Uncle Jed, I was just over on the Brando lot. You know what they got over there? Motivation. We got to get us some of that motivation, Uncle Jed. Motivation."
Didn't he also want to be a skin diver? I seem to remember.
Well, and Ellie Mae referred to him as a nut spy. It's double knot, you dumb old girl cousin. And that's another, you know, the reason you never see the police breaking up a Proud Boys riot is the same reason you never see Jethreen Bodine and Jethro Bodine in the same room together. We can work this all night long.
Oh, Bob, we seem to have, being from Ohio and West by God, Virginia, we seem to have a little bit of a niche here that an awful lot of people are just their chins are dropping going, what the hell are they talking
well,
about?
Well, I didn't know if I was going to get any pushback from you when I pointed out the fact that J.D. Vance ain't no fucking hillbilly because he grew up in Ohio. The right-wing piece of shit who wrote the Hillbilly Elegy and told the hillbillies to quit doing all that meth and opioids and pull themselves up by their goddamn bootstraps.
Well, that's like if you wrote a book, a Buckeye something or other, I'd be like, what the fuck you doing, Bob? You ain't from there.
Yeah, right, you ain't from around here.
Steve,
you mentioned something else there, Steve, and I gotta loop back to it because I know, if I can ever get my building cleaned out, because it's a huge job, my father's photo album from World War II and the years after he returned home is there. And I ache to see these photographs. I hope they still exist. But they're, because I used to look at them when I was a little boy. I looked at them hour after happy hour. And my father was kind of a forward guy. I mean, he's only 5'8", but he figured he was as good as any human being on the planet. And so he would, his best friend from his aircraft carrier days was a staunch Roman Catholic from Cincinnati. of German extraction. No, really? From Cincinnati? German
I'm like,
Catholic?
Wait a minute. German Wait. Catholic from Cincinnati? The hell you say?
Yeah, fuck no, of course not. but he would get on the train here and ride over, and they would spend a weekend, a homestand weekend, watching the Reds. Because I think that's what bound them together in the first place when they met aboard ship. And there is a photograph. My dad just jumped over the rail and went down with his little brownie camera or what the fuck ever, and started jawing with the Reds and, well, the Cardinals were visiting that weekend. And there's pictures of my father standing with Harry the Hat Walker of St. Louis Cardinals fame. Any, if there's any Cardinals fans, you know, diehards in the audience in the Horn family, they'll know Harry the Hat Walker. Harry Walker went on to manage. And that was at Crosley Field. And one of the things that he, you know, I'm establishing my Southern Ohio bona fides or something. One of the things, when he heard that it was Crosley Field's last season, it was to be demolished, and the Reds were going to move to Riverfront.
Cookie Cutter Field.
Yeah, Concrete Donut Stadium.
Yes.
Just like Veterans Stadium, just like Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, just like Busch Stadium, et cetera, et cetera.
And Three Rivers.
That architectural firm made bank doing absolutely not dick. but he moved heaven and earth to make sure he made time for a trip to see Archie and his family. And Archie and my dad and his boy and I, late in the season, the 1968 season, went to see the Reds at Crosley Field. And they played the Giants and lost. And that was by the next year, the big red machine would begin to power up, and then the 70s.
You know whose rookie season was 68?
Yeah, Bench.
Bench. I was gonna say Johnny Bench.
He did not play that night, but I was more into Pete Rose back then. So I got we had seats where I could see, you know, Pete Rose playing down in the outfield.
I've got a couple of Jesus.
I'm sorry, Scott. Go ahead. I know. I'm sorry. I interrupted.
No, never mind. It may not be there anymore, but there was a bar in Cincinnati called Crosley's, way uptown. I mean, they were way up, you know, way past over the Rhine, which is an area of Cincinnati.
Where Pete Rose was from?
Crosley's had a glass-covered model of the old Crosley Field, where you could stand there and look down into it. And, you know, I didn't get to Cincinnati until the original Crosley's was long gone. But anyway, that's all I wanted, over the Rhine and Crosley's. And Marge Schott, thank you for bringing up Marge Schott the other day. A very colorful woman. She had good words to say about Hitler. Do you remember that episode, Steve?
Well, yeah, he just went too far. He was good in the beginning. He just went too far.
And lo and behold, a generation later, what's her name? Candace Owens.
Candace Owens.
Is this proof of reincarnation? That Marge Schott was reincarnated as Candace Owens? Can anybody prove the gap between the death of Marge Schott and the birth of Candace Owens?
Well, here's the irony.
I don't know.
The irony is that Marge Schott would have been reincarnated as a black woman. I guess, you know.
Well, I mean, isn't that the universe just operating the way it's fucking supposed to?
Yeah, but you would have thought she would have been reincarnated as a sensible black woman as opposed to the nutball that is Candace Owens.
Speaking of levels, Steve, to reach enlightenment. Speaking of the nutball that is Candace Owens, we have a Candace Owens sighting. Oh, yes, we do. You know, some of these things we have to... Candace Owens affirming transgender children is actually satanic.
Here we go.
We all knew that, Bob. Tell me something I don't know.
How do you combat your child going into a kindergarten class? And this is actually the circumstance in some schools where they're allowed to call your child by a different gender all day, and they're not required to tell the parent. I can't wrap my... To me, that is Satan, right? Satan is the author of lies and deception. And when I look at the face of this trans movement and this trans agenda and confusing kids, kids are already confused about everything. You know what I mean? Well, yeah, Candace, we do. And our job is to tell them what the truth is. And when I see that, I think this is actually satanic. And I just don't know what we say to those parents who can't afford to take their kids out.
Could somebody get the Thorazine dart?
Well, you know, what's curious is in that entire diatribe, she's worried about trans kids, and yet there's not a word in there about, you know, I worry about parents who have to send their children to public kindergarten because, you know, some follower of Donald Trump may come in and mow them all down with an AK-47 or an AR-15. I can't wrap my... That's Satan, right?
Great point, Bob. Hey, Bob,
people like that.
Go ahead.
Let me interject very quickly. People that like that, I've got a 14-inch glow-in-the-dark vibrating appliance that sings Comedy Tonight. I would just like to take that and brandish that. Not hit her, but just brandish that in the face of someone that's stupid.
Now, that's a little dirty old man there, Scott.
Yeah, I was like, Scott, where are you going with this? I mean, I would be content to just take a small cast iron skillet to the side of her head, but...
I got a question for you.
Yeah, one of those little tiny ones that like you melt butter in.
Yeah, nothing. I wouldn't want to, you know, hurt her too bad. Just put a nice big warble on the side of her head.
Hey, Bob, this is an old DJ question for you. Buddy Beefalo, wasn't that the second iteration after the band Captain Beefheart broke up?
You know, by God, Chris, I think it was.
Yeah.
And Darlene, I got terrible news for you. When they do finally send Buddy Beefalo down to Florida, I think what's going to happen is a python is going to have a big buffalo sandwich. Yeah, I think that's how that's going to end up.
Yeah, some 60 foot rescued anaconda. Sure.
That's not much of a sanctuary then, I guess.
Yeah. Well, Billy's Swamp Adventure is maybe where he'll end up. I've been there 100 degrees on one of those, what do you call them, the water boats? The swamp boats? Fan boats?
Yeah, airboats.
Airboats, yes. And the fucking thing broke down. And there was a 18-foot alligator. We were all looking at him. And then we're all like looking at each other.
Soft
like,
on the outside, crunchy on the inside.
Please. Oh, it doesn't start. And the thing was staring at all of us. And it was like high noon, like perfect alligator lunchtime. And I go to the...
Who knew?
I'm sitting in front of it. I'm sitting in front
alligator
of the
alligator lunchtime.
And I look at the woman behind me and I'm like, I'm glad you're between me and him.
Yeah, that's where you start taking
this particular sanctuary. This particular sanctuary is called Critter's Creek.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know how close that's to the Everglades, where the pythons are, but that's where he's headed, assuming they can, you know, properly sedate him and get him down there.
It doesn't get eaten by an alligator or a python or an anaconda.
Hey, you know, any port in a storm, as far as I'm concerned, because it sounded like they were going to take them out. So at least they stopped it. So
it's the first time I ever saw a zadonk, too. Anyone seen a zadonk?
No.
Zebra donkey mix.
You're making that up.
No.
You're making that up.
You're really dumbass animals.
No. That's a donk.
I'm serious. It was braying at another, like another female. I don't know if it was a donkey or. We had this discussion, last.
Oh, I bet John Britovo would love to have one of those.
Yeah. Jenny, yeah, that's
although,
right.
No, I've heard zebras are genuinely obnoxious animals. you know.
Jenny is too cute, though. He's yeah. Jenny's adorable.
Oh, she's she really is.
She's black and white patched up like a cow.
I saw.
It's adorable.
You know those neighbors who are harassing Jenny are total asses. You know.
Yeah.
And shame on you.
Yeah, how could you do that to her? She's so sweet. She's so
no cowbell for that.
No. That's negative cowbell. You lost a previous cowbell.
That's below low hanging fruit, right?
Yeah, you lost a previous cowbell.
Exactly.
For that.
Low.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very kindly. Look, here it is. Another Friday on the front porch. Community made miracle. Thank you to David, and thank you to Labor Man. We're done. Woo-hoo! Yay!
All right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So that's tremendous.
Hey, I just want to say real quick, I need to step off here, but I want to do my weekly extension of an invitation to anybody. If you need anything, since I seem to be, for some reason, wherever I am, have access to an awful lot of shit that a lot of people can't get, please let me know. However you want to do it, through Bob or... you know, whatever. If you need something, please let me know, and I will do my best. And all for the bagel person, I still got to get it. I just haven't had a chance. I don't have any excuse other than I'm being a shithead. But on the other front, if anyone needs anything, please let me know, and I will do whatever I can to get what you need. Unfortunately, on the masks front, a lot of the masks... The respirators seem to be out. I know somebody who's a distributor who told me that right now everything's being taken for PPE for hospitals and frontline workers because we're anticipating or we're ramping up for another wave starting in September. So, but anything else, let me know and I will do what I can to get you what you need.
Before you go, Steve, before you go, you'll get a kick out of this. Need to just clearing some of the stack, some of the backlog. Back in March, the patriarch of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church gave a TV interview, and he said that COVID-19 was, quote, in translation, of course, God's punishment for sins of men, the sinfulness of humanity. I mean, same-sex marriage. That's Patriarch Filaret of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. Well, it appears that, goddess of irony speaks Ukrainian Russian.
When was he diagnosed?
B was watching back in March. And now, according to a press release from the Ukrainian Orthodox Church to the 42 million people of Ukraine, the following, a statement. We inform that during planned testing, His Holiness Patriarch Filaret of Kyiv and all Rus Ukraine tested positive for COVID-19. Now, His Holiness Bishop... is undergoing treatment at hospital. Glorious Ukrainian hospital.
Steve, before you go.
Yes.
I thank you yesterday for saying via email that I should call more and that you can now get your Scott in San Diego fix anytime you want. Check your Facebook.
Okay. I worry when I don't hear from you, I worry about you.
Well, and so you should.
Scott's a pretty regular poster on Facebook, Steve.
I'm a tortured soul. Thankfully, the torture is intense tickling, so I do all right.
But I want to make sure. I don't even know if I see? I don't, you know, I try to avoid... I mean, I'm really minimized my Facebook exposure because I just get too angry.
Oh, I love angry.
But maybe I see your postings and don't know that it's you.
No, we're not friends, so you wouldn't see my postings because I'm friends only on Facebook.
Okay, well, if you want to reach out and connect, please do, because I like to know when people are okay.
Okay, well, I mean,
with that too.
If you look at the Skype, Steve, you'll see the last name of Scott.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh, a clue.
Smirnoff, I'd be rich.
I'm
and drunk.
Just follow the breadcrumbs. You'll find them, Steve.
Yeah, I'm
okay. It starts with M.
Facebook.
Uh-huh. It starts with M.
Yeah.
Okay. 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 I didn't know.
Again, just clearing some things out because these things are fun. The saga of Jerry Jr., otherwise known as hashtag Cucky Jerry, continues.
Oh, okay.
He's trying
to... That's the gift that keeps on giving.
Oh, it so is. He tried to explain away the dirty pictures of Becky. That's B-E-C-K-I. Becky. Someone stole some pictures I took of my wife in the backyard. Topless. Big deal. Okay? And he said this after Michael Cohen published in his book that making those pictures go away was part of a catch and kill and had everything in the world to do with his endorsement of Trump. It was no quid pro quo, Falwell said. There was no me supporting Trump because of whatever Michael was doing. But it gets better because we find out that it just... Oh my goodness! You get the idea. She's walking around in a black latex cat suit, you know, 24/7. Toward the end of the call, Becky Falwell, who has not commented on the Cohen book or the photographs, and this is the call where he was being interviewed by Reuters. Becky Falwell could be heard, and of course she's a Christian. She's a good, God fearing, upstanding, Bible believing, Christ centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christian. Could be heard urging her husband to cut short the conversation with Reuters. Hang up the goddamn phone! Hang up the phone, Jerry! She was heard to declare.
From everything I've read...
You want me to get the genital cuff?
Boy.
You don't want me to get the genital cuff, do you, Jerry?
Oh, jeez.
Go get the gimp! Go get the gimp!
She's pretty hard up for that pool boy. She's very interested in that pool boy.
Yeah, but Darlene, it's not
I
just
think
the pool boy.
Married. I think she's going to marry the pool
no,
boy.
No, it's not just the pool boy. There was also the personal trainer guy who ran the gym and helped her get all buff.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, I didn't hear that.
And then somehow or another, he managed to get Cucky Jerry to finance the expansion of his gym, I think it was.
Yeah.
So,
same pattern.
Jer's getting a little stressed out.
Well, of course he is.
And now he's threatening to sue people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. A reporter. He agreed to an interview with a reporter. And the reporter started asking questions that Cucky Jerry didn't like. Because it turns out that the outside firm that's investigating all facets of Falwell's time as president I guess they're digging into some interesting things. A university spokesman said, at this time, the forensic investigation is limited to Jerry Falwell's term as president. And so they're not looking at the deals he made as the Liberty lawyer. Sit, Liberty, sit. Woof! Between 2001 and 2005. So there may have been some self-dealing and whatnot.
May have been.
It may have been. So this, again, goes back to the Reuters interview. Hang up the phone, Jerry! Jerry, hang up the phone or I'm going to get the genital cuff! You know where that line comes from? One of my favorite comedies, and it's a remake, but it's Michael Caine and Steve Martin in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Oh, that was a funny movie.
And Steve Martin is playing Ruprecht, and he's running around the room, beating on pots and pans, hollering, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, Oklahoma! And Michael Caine's character says, "Now, Ruprecht, you don't want me to get the genital cuff again, do you? Do you want the genital cuff again, Ruprecht?"
"No."
Reuters, in the interview, asked him about his financial dealings, and Jerry Jr. said, "No, welcome it, because it'll prove that all you guys are liars." And then, because the goddess of irony makes mobster wannabes talk like mobster wannabes, "You got nothing!" And then threatens the lawyer, or threatens the reporter, telling him not to look into the business dealings of his fully grown adult sons, who are also on the Liberty Grift. And he said, "Trust me, you do not want to mess with me, okay?" Or what? He's going to have the Holy Spirit goon squad? What? Oh, God. But in terms of threats of legal action, Steve and Billable and Darlene, you'll enjoy this. The pettifogger who sued CNN on behalf of that little that privileged little asshole at Covington Catholic.
Oh, yeah.
The punk. L. Lynn Wood. You know, I think if my name could be if I was a guy and my name could be mistaken as Ellen, given the problems that Ellen DeGeneres is having right now, I think I'd use the full word that.
Not Stop just, calling me Shirley.
Yeah. Don't call me Ellen. I'm a high powered lawyer. Mike Lindell. The My Pillow grifter, who was out, who went on CNN to hustle oleandrin, the deadly poison, as a cure for the Dondemic. Well, Mike Lindell has hired Ellen Wood to send a nastygram to CNN, threatening a lawsuit because Anderson Cooper had the unmitigated temerity to tell Mike Lindell that oleandrin had not been thoroughly tested. And in his nastygram, Ellen Wood wrote, "While I am fully aware," he's from Atlanta, by the way, "while I am fully aware that Cooper's sarcastic, mocking, derisive, and demeaning tone, attitude, and facial expressions toward Mr. Lindell are not legally actionable, I have complete confidence that Cooper's false and defamatory accusations are actionable." Just once. And just once. You'd love to see the responding lawyer write back, "Dear Ellen, I welcome your lawsuit. We've already engaged a small army of decidedly nerdy but eager forensic accountants to go over every last transaction your client is engaged in as part of the discovery in the suit you plan to file." "This ought to be real fun. File it." "Meanwhile, I've also engaged a small army of equally unexciting but eager lawyers who will peruse every letter of every filing you present to the court with an eye toward filing Rule 11 sanctions against you every time you file until we reach the point where you're not allowed to practice law in so much as Nome fucking Alaska. Very truly yours. Best regards. File it, motherfucker. File it."
Oh, my gosh.
That's good.
That's a wonderful fantasy letter there, Bob.
Yes, and they're fun. So I used to type them out once in a while, and then I'd tear them up and throw them away.
You don't need to. You can just come up with shit like right off the cuff, like, you know, there's no tomorrow, you know?
"You cast aspersions on Mr. Lindell's character and reputation and referred to him as a snake oil salesman when the proper reference would be former meth addict." No, I don't know. Was it meth? I can't remember. Was it meth? Was it crack? But yeah.
Well, I think it was meth. I don't know. I think it was meth.
Yeah. Bob, you're not practicing anymore for probably a good reason, but you should be staff lawyer for The Onion.
Oh, there you go.
No. There's no.
Although The Onion has become reality journalism these days, the weird shit that happens, it's like, oh, that must be from The Onion. No. CNN or...
By the way, note coming in from Dave number 11 for Scott. Three words, Scott. Bell-bottom blues. Sitting here quietly in your friend request box. So, you might want to go look at your friend requests. But, hey, we're at the top of the hour. We have managed to finish 3 hours of radio this Friday. Not much of a weekend for me, because I'm still going to be on the 4 to 12 Saturday and Sunday. And Jesus, I don't know when I ever get a day off.
Hey, Bob, can I mention something that might be important for people to know?
Yeah, sure.
So I've been receiving a couple of alerts from PayPal lately saying, hey, thanks for your recent purchase. Usually it's over $75 for things I haven't bought. It's a fake form letter. They don't know it.
Oh, Jeremy, thank you.
They have one of the two email addresses you know I use, but I rarely send you. It's the ATT one. So they sent it to that, thinking it's my PayPal address. So if you click on the link that says, you know, dispute this, it brings you to a form which looks official. You type in your username and your password.
Oh!
Put it something like, fuck you, fuck your mother for my password, and put it through. Then it asks you for all your background information, everything, up into a credit card number.
Yeah, don't
but
answer that.
It looks completely official.
No. Yeah, I've had that happen. I had a Wells Fargo, an email I thought was from Wells Fargo. They mirrored the website of Wells Fargo to make it look like Wells Fargo, and I like made the mistake of putting in my password, so I had to change. Yeah, I realized after the fact that
the PayPal people,
the top address that they're slick to, because it'll never be official address.
Yeah. They're very slick, these fraudsters.
And PayPal is eager to find out about these scammers. If you call them, they will be most helpful in explaining to you, nope, that ain't us, and will you please forward those sons of bitches to us?
Good.
So if you call them and you say you've got a question about an email from PayPal, they will very happily walk through it and verify whether it's them or not. And in fact, if you're on voicemail with them, the voicemail itself will walk you through how to identify a legitimate note from PayPal.
Hmm.
So
Bob, the Buddy the Beefalo challenge was met tonight, You're going to talk to somebody, whoever it was that made the challenge for the new subscribers, to see if he'll bend the rules a bit and allow existing subscribers to increase their subscription.
That is correct. I will do both of
them.
Cool.
Okay. Yes. Let me know.
Thank you, Darlene. And maybe between now and the next time we talk, we'll find out the etymology of the word Naugatuck.
Yeah, I'll look it up. We do have a lot of Native American names, like Lake, we have Lake Warmog and...
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how you... I'm just trying to figure out how Central Appalachia shares a Native American word name, place name, with places far away as Connecticut.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's cool. That'd be cool to figure that out. Yeah.
All right, so let's wrap things up. And by the way, a reminder, the front porch goes around to the back porch, Sparky's back porch, after hours. If you want to continue the conversation, you're welcome to. If you're too shy to use your voice on the radio, you're welcome to. That part isn't broadcast. Before I leave, Steve from Georgistan, you have been as quiet as a graven image. You okay, brother?
He's been active in the chat, actually, Bob.
Yeah, I'm here, Bob.
There he is.
Man. I'm just taking it all in, brother. Thanks for checking in on me, though.
Well, it's always kind of worrisome, you know. Like to hear from you, and
thanks.
Don't like to think I'm blowing past you.
I know you're not.
Well, he's always on the back porch, Bob.
Good deal.
Thanks, Steve.
Hey, everybody.
Hang around, Steve. We'll chat.
Okay, cool.
All right, everybody. Thanks again for a magnificent conversation. I love these conversations on Fridays. They're so much fun. My best and warmest thoughts to everyone out west dealing with the misery of the fires. We can do a sociology experiment. Anybody that wanders down into Orange County, see if anybody's, you know, now that, see if the freedom and but the ADA and it's in the Constitution. See if that shit applies to breathing smoke too, or maybe are they wearing masks now? Might be interesting. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks for the community made miracle this evening. Thank you so much. That means we start afresh next week with no hole to dig out of it. I can't tell you how important that is. Thank you. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging with the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thanks to Sparky around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Hey, brand new Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Gather around the Truth Seeker campfire at headon.live and enjoy, what's the line? End your day screaming. Right, with Mike Malloy. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe. If it's at all possible, stay home. If you have to be out, wear your mask, wear gloves. Thanks for the gloves, by the way, to an anonymous friend of the program. Maintain your social distance. And if you can, as Paul from Parts Unknown advised, expand your social distance from 6 to 10 feet, more if you can. And if somebody comes burbling at you, hollering, I'm gonna sue you for saying that the My Pillar guy, my client, is a snake oil salesman. I'll sue. Avoid that person like the plague, because he is. Later, y'all. Have a great weekend.